Face it that way.
She behaving.
Yes, face it that way.
Okay.
Well, he just did it.
Call this regular meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Compaquina Independent School District. The date is March 26, 2013, and the time is 6:08. Tony, can you please call the roll?
Mr. Coronado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Medina?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Searles?
Here.
Take this to the next item.
The Pledge of Allegiance.
We have two, Samantha and Aspen. And they come up to the front. Can you all lead us into a pledge of allegiance?
Prepared for higher education or are workforce ready.
Thank you. And that will take us to the next item.
Board honors Mr. Babeles.
And just real quick before we start board honors, I was going to ask the board if we could pull out a consent agenda. I think that item O to all of the board honors. That's okay with the board? Is that okay? Mm-hmm. And if that's okay, can I get a motion, second?
Sure. I move to remove letter O, the Memorandum of Understanding with the Boys and Girls Club of El Paso, from off of number 6, the consent agenda, and move it to 2B.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. If there's no discussion, can we pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Board President Rodriguez, members of the board, Mrs. Brigham, could you please join me in the steps in front of the dais to start this month's school board recognition program? For those of us that are a little older, we may remember a song that says, "The future is so bright, I gotta wear shades." And while it's a cheesy line, it really holds true to what's happening here tonight. You see, I come bearing news of some athletic progress that middle school level here in Canutillo is making way. Certainly, what's happening at the middle school level here in Canutillo is making the coaches at Canutillo High School perk up and listen. It's Canutillo Middle School that's showing us and the rest of El Paso how it's done. The 7th grade volleyball team from CMS didn't just win the district and conference championships. The girls did it with an undefeated season. To the 7th grade volleyball team, let's come out and be recognized. All right, let's line up. We're going to take a big picture with the board, okay?
We're going to stagger on the steps so we can get everybody in.
Do we have CMS principal and...
Yes, she is. She's here. She's here. And they'll be here again next year, just so you know.
Could the parents of these student athletes please stand up? CMS has another district and conference double champion on its hands. This time around, it's the boys who are bringing the medal to the trophy case. The 8th grade boys basketball team won district and took top honors in the Little 12 Conference by beating teams from throughout El Paso County and southern New Mexico. Could Coach Ricardo Pacheco and the CMS 8th grade basketball team come up and greet the board? Come up and take a photo as well.
Look, that's where he gets it. Can you step in just a little bit there?
There we go. Everybody smile. You're looking down.
Thank you.
School board members, it's worth noting that CMS had two more teams this season that won a district championship, but fell just short of conference. There were runners-up both teams in the conference championship. The seventh grade girls basketball team, coached by Mr. Joe Bueno, and the eighth grade girls basketball team, coached by Mr. Tim Erickson, won the district championship and runners-up in the conference as well. So we want to kind of give them a chance. And I really want to give a big thank you and congratulations to CMS Principal Monica Reyes and Jill. And to CMS Athletic Coordinator Sharon Norris for their leadership. And
you never get recognized.
Oh, yes, I do.
As the athletic coordinator and so on.
She's and I my coach, sure. Too.
We don't need to date her.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharon. It's fun.
They're good. They're both. Oh, no.
Oh, I know.
This is
my
27th.
Thank you.
Good
thanks.
Mr. Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham, this includes this month's board honors.
Did you hear the complaint? You want them off at
the bottom? All they had to do was ask. So I'll have them every time. There you are.
I want to thank you all for coming out. It's a great pride. There's a lot of familiar faces, and actually, one of my classmates is one of the coaches. So. Y'all have a good one.
Good night. Good job. Did you want to do item O from the consent agenda? The memorandum? Yes, it's item O, Memorandum of Understanding with the Boys and Girls Club of El Paso.
And at this time, I believe, I don't know if there's somebody that wanted to communicate on the Boys and Girls Club. First, thanks for the Memorandum of Understanding and our partnership. We appreciate it. I believe we're going on the second here. Sorry.
And this is... Ms. Parker, do you want to come to the table, please? This is Ms. Searles. Remember, we had talked. We did put in a grant. This is under the Century 21, okay? And this MOU is going to be doing another contract, okay, for the Anthony ISD and TRISD and Flint. I believe there's one other, but I know Ms. Parker would like to.
Mr. Rodriguez, board members, and Mrs. Brigham. We come on behalf of not only the elementary, but also the Boys and Girls Club to ask permission and for y'all and you to consider once again for a second year to have this bond, this partnership that we have with the Boys and Girls Club. Last year when we started it out, the children that benefited was third, fourth, and fifth grade students. This school year, we opened it up from first to fifth grade, plus the children that went on to elementary to the middle school. We also welcomed the sixth graders to our campus, and next year when we hopefully continue doing this partnership, we should have not only first through sixth, but also first through seventh. So we're hoping to embrace the middle school kids, and once they make their way to high school, also welcome the high school students to our campus. And basically, what it is, and I know Mr. Arturo from the Boys and Girls Club can elaborate, but this has really been a win-win situation at Canopy Elementary, because we, and when we started this endeavor, we started looking for an activity, an extracurricular activity that will help our children after hours instead of having them just walk either home by themselves or on the streets or what have you. So when we partnered up with the Boys and Girls Club, we gave our children an alternative to stay on campus in a secure, risk-free environment that not only addressed their homework, their academics, but also gave them leadership skills, gave them the opportunity to be exposed to the STEM program, which is the science, the technology, the engineering, and the math. And we've been able to do that Monday through Thursday from 3 to 6 o'clock. And then also we give the opportunity to do recreational activities. And so this has really, truly, what we've seen is these children that stay after hours have really benefited, because not only are they doing their homework, they're being exposed, like I said, to academics, but also to leadership skills. So we would like to ask the board that we continue this endeavor. The first year when we did open it up, we went to Extra Middle that awarded us $16,000 to put this program on. Then after this year, they asked us that they can no longer continue this partnership. So we went out and we looked for more support, and we received it this year from Freeport. And so they awarded us $10,000, plus our alumni of the Boys and Girls Club donated another $3,000. So we have actually $13,000 to continue running this program. And I'm going to have Mr. Arturo here elaborate on an endeavor that we would like to take on, a five-year endeavor, which is a grant that will sustain us for five more years to be able to continue this program for our children here at Canopy. Not only Canopy Elementary, I'm going to say Canopy ISD, because truly, when we truly carry it out to what our vision is, it will also embrace our middle school kids and our high school children. So, Mr. Arturo.
Hello. Thank you very much for having us. My name is Arturo Jaime. I'm the Executive Director for Boys and Girls Clubs of El Paso, and we're delighted to be in partnership with Canadillo ISD and Canadillo Elementary School. We've seen some really wonderful things happening. The kids just flock to the program. They love the fun, and they love the learning, too. We're bringing a lot of diverse different opportunities for kids, anything from bullying presentations to science, technology, engineering, and math, and we're continuing to build that. So since we saw how well this program worked year one, I've got a grant writer, and we've been looking around, and we found a grant, 21st Century Learning Center grant, that would allow us to continue to have a sustainable program for 5 years and to expand it and bring in some experts in science to help. And that is what the MOU is about. That it would also include four other ISDs, Anthony, Canutillo, Flint, and Niki ISD. And we would be serving mainly middle schools, five elementary and one middle school. So we're very excited about that opportunity. I'd like to thank you very much for your support of community partnerships. And we're hoping that we can get your approval on that. And hopefully we'll get some funding and do some great things for kids. In addition, I would like to, our funders, we wanted to recognize them, and we had brought these frames for them. Our tagline is Great Future Start Here, because we believe that behind that after school door, you know, we provide great opportunities for kids to develop just their dreams. And they're not here, but this would be for ArcelorMittal, and then this one is for Freeport MacMoran. And I've got one here for, actually for the Boys and Girls Club of El Paso Alumni Association. They are just a great example of what Boys and Girls Clubs are about. Yes, they came to our, these gentlemen here came to the club long before I was there, but they came as young boys and have gone on to do some really great things with their life. And so now they've come back to be a part of the club to help other kids as they, you know, experience their Boys and Girls Club days. So I'd like to present this on behalf of the partnership with kind of the OISD and Boys and Girls Club to the El Paso Boys and Girls Club Alumni Association. They not only provide support and they volunteer. They do, they've done Toastmaster groups at other clubs. And so they're always there to support them. They're providing funding as well.
Yes. I'm going to add our endorsement. I'm Eloiso de Avila, president of the Boys and Girls Club of El Paso Alumni Association. Two of my friends from, two of my fellow alums are here. Jesus Reza and Yolanda.
Thank you.
Mr. Reza was the financial officer for Kennecott Corporation in, with, affiliated with Freeport. He's the one who connected us to Freeport in El Paso, Mr. John Quinn. He was here, but saw the agenda and didn't think that we were going to discuss it, and he left. Otherwise, he would have been here. And Mr. Nava, Donel Nava, is a retired principal from Riverside High School in Isleta ISD, but he's been all over the district as a retired annuitant. Whenever they need somebody good, they call him. Briefly, my career, I finished as a supervisor in labor employee relations for Customs and Border Protection for all of Texas and New Mexico border, for covering both the Border Patrol and the bridge people, I call them, you know, the Department of Homeland Security. All of us went to school. I'm talking about beyond high school. We went on to college. And we believe that education is a great equalizer for our society. In my volunteer work that I do now that I'm retired, I happened to go to a conference in San Antonio last week. And we had a professor from Harvard. His name is Richard Murnane. He talked about the importance of the STEM idea in early schooling, about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's really important, and that's one way to get kids that are not so fortunate in economically deprived areas to finally get ahead and at least be on an even keel with other people. The clubs that we knew as kids are very different from the clubs as we know them now. For us, it was recreational, mainly keeping us out of trouble, and we loved it. We played sports and all that. The clubs that we have now, Arturo, I guess, touched on it a little bit, but there's tutoring programs with Sylvan Learning Center. There's the STEM projects about doing homework projects. If we can do something to start a Junior Toastmasters club with teams in Canutillo, that would be a wonderful thing where the kids can see a real-life mentor and really taking them along and helping them to perform in public, to do public speaking. We helped two of our kids in previous years, and they went on to do very well in the Youth of the Year competition in El Paso. We called two of our greatest heroes from the past, Richard Lopez and Ignacio Chavez, who went on to become National Boys of the Year in 1961 and 63. They met with President Kennedy, and they're our heroes for life, but we'd like to duplicate that. Again, this opportunity to reach out to more kids throughout the El Paso County is a tremendous opportunity to help other kids. The economics about having a school and have all the utilities paid for by the school district and have all the amenities there, and then simply have the staff trained by Arturo Jaime and with the passion of Consuelo Parker do all those things that are necessary to have kids come in and do something productive with their lives after school. It's real, real key. You know, it's real key for them to not get in trouble, to do more than just play ball, but to do the homework projects that they assist them with. We just can't say enough about it. We believe so much in it. Our primary focus is to give scholarships, but we believe in the program that we wanted it to expand and not fall off by the wayside, that we provide $3,000 of our funds to do it so that John Quinn and Freeport Mac Moran could come in and rescue the program, at least for this year. We hope we get the grant, but we hope you consider, if for some reason we don't get the grant, that somehow Palantio IMD will use Title I funds in the future to keep it alive. It's a wonderful program. Can't say enough about it.
If I may also have something for Ms. Parker. Can't say enough about Ms. Parker. She's an amazing, visionary person who's got true passion for seeing kids succeed. And I think that she has really been kind of like the catalyst for this program. So we're very grateful to you.
Thank you.
So, with that said, all the events that we've done that our students are truly benefiting from this program, we would like to ask the board if you would consider supporting this program once again and showing us your support by saying yes to this program. It truly has touched the lives of many, many children. I know that the parents from our community have come and said thank you very much for giving our children an outlet to go after hours. You know, sometimes parents are working late, they don't have, they're not there with their children, but knowing that they have a safe, clean environment that is organized, that is structured, and that's geared towards leadership and academics has truly benefited our children. Just before we came here, I know we were talking about looking at data. How has our scores, how has our grades improved? And I told the gentleman that I would provide them that information, but definitely with our district assessments, with our state assessments, it has truly helped. And then they brought in Sylvan, and we targeted our second and our third grade. The school didn't have to pay anything. Boys and Girls Club was able to hire Sylvan, and we targeted students that were right in the borderline, just right there for them to be able to pass. And so we were able to do that, and we're continuing, hoping next year we would have a more solid partnership with Sylvan also and offer it to more grade levels than just my second and third grade students that we did this year. And we just finished it right before spring break. So that's the plus of not only, I know that they speak that it's wonderful having a school to partner up, but the school has also benefited from this partnership because our children have benefited from the partnership from Boys and Girls Club. So I think it's a win-win situation for both of us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to approve the memorandum of understanding with the Boys and Girls Club of El Paso. If it's been approved by legal counsel.
I haven't seen it, but I know we've had it in place before. I'll take these materials, we'll go over, but it's a standard form.
Right, and it's pending on the grant, yes.
Okay.
We have a motion and a second. Before that, I just want to thank you all for the partnership, and especially the alumni association, and hopefully we can continue to grow the program.
Yes, thank you very
wonderful.
Much.
Thank you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I was in the Boys and Girls Club when I was growing up. Yeah, I was the catcher. We were an all-star team in Florida. Yeah, it was a great part of my youth, too. So I love seeing it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. With that being said, can we pull the ball?
Mr. Cornell?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Yay! Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your support and partnership.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll take this to the next
item. Item 3A is consider approval of new CBAP membership. Mr. Reveles.
Mr. Rodriguez, members of the board, Ms. Brigham. As we spoke about before, the CBAC opened up its membership again. They're trying to recruit new members to replace members that have left, and also just to revive interest in serving in this very important committee. We opened up our membership via an application process. We advertise the application process using our resources, including social media, traditional media, and our website. And The period of application ended the Friday before spring break, and a total of three applications came through. All three copies of the three applications were provided to you in your board packet. And the three members are Robert Hood, Andrew Sedevin, and Peter Steele. All three of them indicated an interest and desire to serve in this committee. They each bring different backgrounds, one in legal, one in education, and another one is a business owner. All three of them have children in the school district as well. So I'm bringing this these three names for your consideration for membership into the CBAC.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve these three people who volunteered.
I second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? No, I do have a question. I had gotten a call, Tony, from Timothy Cantrell, and tried to communicate with you and wanted to participate. Did you communicate with him?
Yes, and I believe that Kim extended the application to him personally, but okay. I don't believe it was returned.
No problem. I had found a call, so if not, can we pull the board?
Sure. Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana? Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Thank you, Board Member.
Item B is Finance Audit Facilities Planning Committee meeting report. Mr. Coronado?
Mr. Chair, fellow board members, we had a meeting March 13th. It was very well attended. I'm going to highlight, or actually just give you a highlight of what transpired. The committee actually, a great deal of the time was spent on the HVAC presentation by Johnson Controls. We did get a presentation though with our auditor, Mr. Hector Rodriguez, on our compliance calendar, and everything is looking up. And a lot of those items have been methodically been put to rest, and compliance calendar is actually looking pretty good. He presented an update on the hotline. I think there are very few items that actually have new items that have come in. There is one thing with respect to the audit selection on the audit for an external auditor that was presented to us, that apparently we weren't getting enough participation about the bid process for people that are interested. The committee felt that it was important to let the process go through and decide whether or not to change our policy with regard to having a mandatory rotation for external auditors. It's recommended to the board that we wait off and not change the policy at this time.
Mr. Chair, by the way, do you know when those are going to be presented to us? When the closing of that was?
I don't recall the date.
It closes April 1st. We extended the bid from the 15th to April 1st.
Okay, so April 1st, then April 1st is Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
So the next.
Well, we get a report on that Friday packet, the list, so that way we could.
Okay, we can do
that. Correct. Then we did have the report from on the bond project monthly report. Mr. Goitia, our bond manager, presented to the committee a PowerPoint presentation. The basics of that is the actual 100% design of most of the projects. The projects that are the district-wide projects are already actually, the majority of all those projects are complete with respect to the design phase. And some of them have actually, on the district-wide projects, some of those items have actually already been taken care of, completed, and others are in progress as we speak with respect to completing the actual construction of those projects, and everything seems to be rolling along pretty good on that side of it. There was the the discussion on the from CBAC. One of the, several of the members actually from CPAC attended the committee and made a point that they wanted more communication from the board with respect to when these items came out. And I think that it was communicated to CPAC that we would love to see them at the actual committee meeting or some of the representatives from CPAC so that, you know, as we're getting their information, they'll also be, you know, receiving some of that information. And obviously, subsequent to that, we would provide them with written documentation on everything that's going on, but that they were welcome to be present in our committee. There were sentiments made by several or a few of the board, the CPAC members, that they felt that it was very important with respect to the district-wide projects that the HVAC or the conversion to refrigerated air conditioning, but that was of primary importance. That presented that there was a primary importance to the CPAC that that the board see through that is that part of the bond is actually completed as was promised. Obviously, the committee communicated that after the presentation of Johnson and Cole that we're about $3.5 million short. And I'll actually get that into a few minutes. Mr. Robles informed the committee that the district was moving forward with the updating the website to add and maintain the bond information. And Ms. Brigham also advised the committee that the webmaster would be attending training and management system after spring break. There was an item of information with respect to a request from respect for an easement. The committee's recommending to the board that we wait off to see if the electric company rethinks the project on, I think it was either Trans Mountain or Artcraft, wasn't it? Not Trans Mountain, but Artcraft. With respect to putting the lines underground instead of overhead through the park that was going to maybe impact that community and our park that's there. And so it was recommended that the item be put to a future board meeting to discuss that item with the electric company. There's also a recommendation from the committee with respect to the extension of the private sewer line and that the committee recommended that the Board of Trustees approve that at this meeting that we're having today. Then we get to the big item where Johnson Control made a presentation of the scope of work for each campus. You know, we were enlightened and we knew we were short on the budget. And initially, as we all saw, it was a very bleak presentation initially from the people that were involved initially on this project that we may not even be able to do the complete project, let alone some of the other items that were not even planned for in the budget, to include electrical and the structure for metal structure and support structures for the actual HVAC units. Something that obviously was, and the third item was the actual controls, efficiency controls, that were not even budgeted for at all. I think it was only one or two of the campuses that were budgeted for that. Two campuses, but none for the rest. But after a presentation by Johnson Controls, not only did they present us with a project that was feasible, they managed to somehow lower, include those other items that were not included in the budget initially, and basically add the controls to district-wide and come in only $3.5 million over budget as compared to the initial presentation to the board about a year and a half ago that it was going to be somewhere between 17 and 24 million. The initial figure of 17 million plus, I think, was presented. It was only for the actual units, not for the support structures, controls, or the electrical infrastructure that was needed to update our HVAC. So, or to do the conversion in some of the campuses. we now have something that is feasible to actually provide to our community that was promised under the bond. You know, it's beyond me how these things, these other items were left out of the bond, or how we even, you know, our individual was in charge of providing the budget for these items, left out something as important as electrical and structural support for these items, as well as the controls. And it's beyond me how that was just not included in our budget. And there, with that respect, though, there is a, we are within a good reach of being able to actually implement that project when we probably thought we'd only be able to do it to about half of the initially planned campuses. So it's something that the board's going to be discussing tonight. The committee is recommending to the board that that the project go ahead as planned. There is a critical deadline tonight that that we need to actually act today because of a deadline coming up by Johnson Controls to actually order the equipment. It's a time-sensitive issue because if we don't get it ordered and started, there is very doubtful that we'll get it done this summer, and it will get delayed until next summer, which means an approximate increase not only in the financing, if the board decides to finance the rest of this project, shortfall in the project, but an increase in the rest of the items and the equipment, labor, et cetera, which would probably then at that point really put it out of reach for us to be able to do a district-wide plan. So it's something critical that the board really needs to decide tonight, and we really need to discuss how we're going to try and commit that $3.5 million, would it be through a financing project or both the financing and provide cash up front, either through our recapture or from the from our savings that we have in our account. So fund balance. I don't know, you know, the part of this we're going to have to act in the dark because we won't know the exact amount of the recapture till probably after the end of April. Right. Martha?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. So part of this will probably be acting without a whole lot of knowledge of whether we have, how much funds we may have from the recapture of this year's M&L. But the committee is recommending to the board that the board commit to doing this project. Do it now, do it during the summer, before it gets out of hand for next year and we're not able to do it completely, at least completely the way it's within reach right now.
I think it's phenomenal they can even think to do it during the summer. I'm absolutely amazed that we'll be able to do that.
Yeah. The rest of the items, if anybody has any questions about them, I'd be glad to answer some questions. But
I have a question. Under Johnson Control, the last sentence,
mm-hmm.
It says that they reiterated the fact that they are only upgrading the cooling system and not the heating system district-wide.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
What is the plan since we have two schools, since we visited the last, look at the last tour? What is the plan on the heating system for those two particular schools?
Those are the two middle schools?
Right.
Ms. Matthews, on the middle school boilers, issue has been addressed, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. And Johnson Control's current contract is a cooling-only contract, and so they went through the detailed scope of work of what the bond commitments were and what their proposal was. And so, like Mr. Carlotta mentioned, they have many things.
Can you come up to the room?
Like structural reinforcements, but the heating was not a part of it.
Right, but what the question was, can you come up to the mic, please? The question was, is the two middle schools, we went in on the tour of the two middle schools. I do know that the pump at Canto Middle School has been corrected. I do know that, but I'm not sure about AMS. I, that one kind of
Right, the maintenance department has been working very hard this last winter with the help of some of the bond funds as well.
Right.
Repairing the boiler system. And they've been working all winter long to get that up to speed. And so one of the things that Johnson Controls presented during the facilities committee meeting was their scope of work, which they outlined all of the bond commitments, what things above and beyond they provided in which areas, you know, how they did their assessment and decided what was the optimal scope to choose.
Right.
And I think we talked about it last time, and you were going to contact Johnson Controls to bring us a plan.
Yes, we did, and we asked them to,
financial situations.
What yes, and we asked them to provide a cost, and they presented their presentation during the last.
So is this meeting. Is this part of that?
The cost associated with that is not currently in the contract that they're showing.
And at the committee, we did discuss that the heating issues, and Johnson Controls advised us that it would probably for the rest of the campuses to actually include the heating elements by doing basically heat pumps. Is that correct, Mr. Lopez? Would cost approximately $3.5 to $4 million extra to do it for all the campuses. And I don't know that, as it is, we're $3.5 million short.
And after listening, it didn't seem like it was the urgency that it sounded like we had.
Yeah,
that was sufficient.
And actually, Johnson Controls.
And they were going to put in a little special something, those heat caps.
They're air circulators.
Heat strips. They're being included into the cooling units. So when we pull outside air, because we have to mix the air and also circulate the hydronic heat, you'll get heat in the buildings. It's not going to be a heater running, like, you know, to run your temperature, but it'll be a variance pursuant to the outside heat. And we added that piece of the scope pursuant to the understanding that there was no heat already in the bond process. So we tried getting you more than what was in there, but was asked to bring back a price, which came up to about $400,000 to $500,000 per school in addition to do, and that's just with the heat pumps. Then we have to run either gas or electric to be able to, depend on which way you wanted to go with that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of infrastructure that would have to go with that.
But even with what the Johnson Controls is proposing is an improvement to our heating issue
right
now, because the radiant heat will actually be circulated better than what it is now. Right now there is actually no circulation.
No. With controls, we're able to control that and we'll recycle that air throughout the building.
Not only that, it's probably even a better solution to our air quality, because we don't have stagnant air that the heat and we get a better.
Absolutely. Currently, you're not getting any outside air, so
right,
we're adhering to that standard.
Can I let me ask this clarifying question? If there are some sections that were recently built, or not recently built, but these are the newer sections in these two campuses, the middle schools I'm referring to, mm-hmm, and they have the heating, both the AC and heating units, are they going to be removed?
No, we're going to be tying in with control systems to Garcia, which doesn't have, so we're going to tie it in all to one system where you're able to control it at a point where it's designated.
She's speaking of a wing in out at the middle school where they have package units that have both heating and cooling. So in the instances where they were going to replace that, Johnson Control said that they would replace it in kind. Since those areas no longer have heating, they would have to replace, they'd have to provide heating.
Right. And that's what we're doing.
But
sorry,
these sections have both heating and AC.
Yeah, that one portion.
That one wing, right.
Uh-huh.
Does that answer? Or did you have any other questions?
Well, I wish we could be able to provide the heating, but it's going to be an issue just to provide the extra money for the refrigerated air.
And let me just share one other thing. On the delta that we're talking about, the shortfall, we have a piece of that we're guaranteeing pursuant to the performance contract.
Right.
So $2 million of that is coming from
savings on the M&O.
From the M&O, from the savings of the guarantee. The actual shortfall was, I think, $1.3 million.
Exactly.
1.35. So have additional funding. So I just wanted to share that. Okay.
The other question, just real quick, I think we need to address and communicate. I know you're concerned, Ms. Gonzalez, and we need to communicate that and look at hopefully the next bond project if it needs to be addressed. Hopefully this works, and if not, we need to address that as well. Before a year or so ago, we were looking at just with the MNK architectural contract, $1 million just for their part, and the total was going to come out to 20-something million, and that was not including controls. Is that correct?
I don't know if the 24 million was not including controls. I know that the initial 17 million was just the units.
Without controls. Yeah, that's what I heard, and I think that was verified the other night mm-hmm. with MK as well.
Yeah, because I mentioned that, and there were they nodded on that.
We're here to provide a solution. I mean, as you know, we're trying to provide a solution, and as much as we can get into that budget.
Was that it, Mr. Cardinal?
That's it.
Okay.
Any questions
regarding this?
You know, Ms. Gonzalez, I wanted to tell you, I was concerned about that heating unit, but they did give me confidence that what we will be better than what we have. And they explained it in depth. We totally took it apart and explained it to her. I felt pretty confident it was going to be okay. Proof will be in the pudding.
And also because when we visited those campuses, we were like,
and you probably have a lot of leakage because some of those are probably the evaporative coolers are now just covered, if I understand. So mm-hmm. you're getting some of that air.
That's
going to go away. That piece of it will go away.
Mm-hmm. You actually do get downdrafts coming out of the swamp coolers.
Yes.
And if they're not properly sealed after,
you're going to get some
during the winter months, we are going to get the heat's going to escape through there. But actually, I think actually the type of heating that we have, even though it's not a modernized type of deal, but the hydronic heat actually is probably a better for the buildings, in my opinion, than...
For this environment,
than the actual heat pump.
Yes, sir.
I think. And I think this solution in terms of getting the circulators and getting an extra heat strip in there will make it a better condition for the kids.
Okay. Then, if there's no other questions, I guess can that take us to next item?
Item C, Policy, Instruction, Personnel, Student Services Committee Meeting Report, Mrs. Gonzalez.
Okay. We had this Instruction, Personnel, Policy, Student Services Council Committee Meeting on March 11th. I'm also going to go briefly. We discussed the Attendance Review Committee. The board shall establish an attendance committee which will consider the administration recommends consideration of the following campus personnel constitute the attendance committee. And it will consist of a grade level assistant to principal, but in the end we decided that the principal doesn't have to be there. They will they can assign an administrator, a grade level counselor, truant officer, attendance clerk. Actually, a truant officer, we removed it. Mm-hmm. And grade level teacher representative, special education representative, special education representative, if applicable, everyone versus native, and at-risk coordinator, a team parent coordinator, if needed. And, we also heard a DAP report presented by Ms. Colleen Leiden. They also, Ms. Lana Zuniga presented a community learning centers grant. We also heard tonight the MOU presented by Ms. Parker on the Boys and Girls Club, MOU on Head Start, report from the early college high school on graduates. We heard a report evaluation report from Stan Fierro, Renaissance, and I Station. And resolution of the board to suspend portions of the EIA local and EIC local for the 2012-2013 school year only. Okay.
Also, a CT counselor job description was presented to us, which is going to be presented to the full board tonight. A governmental relations job description will be presented to the personnel committee meeting. Director of curriculum and instruction job description was presented, and TASB will review it for possible salary, actually possible salary revisions. Executive director of school and student resources job description is also going to be revisited. Despite this, Ms. Carrasco presented this item for clarification purposes regarding district stipends. And along that, Ms. Carrasco requested the CT stipends be reorganized regarding the amount of chapters per campus and the numbers of sponsors. And the committee agreed to make all corrections and changes with the exception of CT stipends, which will remain until next year. Academic achievement grading progress reports to parents. That was also recommended to the full board tonight. Part of update 95, academic achievement retention and promotion. It's also being recommended tonight. What else? That's it. Any questions?
I do have a question. One regarding the Kate.
Yes, sir.
Remember Ms. Araujo was going to present something with Martha?
That's part of the, it's listed here.
But there was, remember she had not had the full amount or something, and there was
right.
A discussion.
I do believe that, speak up. Perfect time.
I saw it as mayor. It was on page 170.
On the stipends, ma'am.
Page 170, but it's on the consent agenda, right?
Yeah.
Should we pull it, or?
Yes, the board, I believe Ms. Carrasco would like that item pulled.
Yeah.
Huh? Well, we'll just wait for the consent agenda, how about that? I do have a question on the evaluations for work. We're doing candidate interviews. School districts, and I heard one of the things that Isleta does is they do a four quadrant, and I can't recall all four quadrants, but they talk about how much is the cost of that program as part of the evaluation, where is the direct impact within, if it's LEP students or if it's special ed students. And then the evaluation quadrant, and there's another quadrant, but it would be something to look at, and I think we could add that to the evaluation.
I'm sorry, you mean as far as the stipend evaluation, sir?
No, I'm talking about programs like
okay. For Isleta?
Yeah, so it's okay. Like a cover sheet saying, okay, or a cover sheet to our survey saying, this is how much money we're spending on. This is where the needs are, or where it's supposed
to be. Population targeted.
Yeah, and then sort of where it gives us a better idea.
The so what, where, why, what, how? Yes.
And so, wouldn't that be special?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be more specific to that survey?
I've been asking for that for 2 years. And just that simple, who, what, why, when, where, how. So it'd be awesome if that circle is complete. Is Ms. Nero?
No, I didn't. No, I excuse you.
Okay. Okay, that's all I have. Unless, does anybody have any questions for Madam Chair?
Thank you.
Both very good meetings, a lot of information, a lot of items, which hopefully it helps us streamline and I think it's working. So, hearing that, can we go to the next agenda item?
Item D is the TASB Legislative Conference Report. Mr. Rodriguez?
Just to brief up on some of the stuff, one of the things the legislative update. They talked about several bills, and I'll we're going to be meeting with our state legislators soon, me and Adrian. And so some of the discussion that we have, and I'll save that to the next item, but there's several bills and that are either past committee or pending in committee, and talk about either the distinguished, recommended, and minimum programs. One is talking about 26 distinguished and recommended, or 22 the minimum, the 4x4 plus courses that talks about what kind of coursework here in technology. So there was a lot of information on the legislative update, also on the legal update. We were part of the legal update, which was interesting. And there was a lot of course, TASB and Joy Baskin and Joy. Our TASB legal team are excellent individuals. It's neat to watch their little skits and how they present the information. So I'll be providing that information as well. One of the interesting things that I did see, and something that's starting to change, is the public-private partnerships, and it's called the public-private partnerships. P3 is the acronym for it, and it talks about how they did that with the Texas Cowboys Stadium, Arlington, and some of the colleges are starting to do that, where it's either financed through the public side, as well as sort of an all, you know, from design build, and you hold one individual accountable. And the state, the legislative, I believe it was this last legislative year, where they recently passed to allow governmental entities, which include the cities, counties, and school districts, to receive the bids from private entities. And so it's designed also for individuals that can't pass either a bond or a TRE, and as well as, you know, if you do have the financing mechanism, then the ability to fast track that compared to the processes that are in place. So it's something neat. The individuals that were discussing about that were Rafael Lanchino, which is the state representative, and is also council in Dallas, and the other individual was Craig Cunningham from Wells Nelson, and Josh was the one that presented them, Josh Serna from Heartland ISD. So it was an interesting thing, and it's just now that they're allowing school districts and cities and counties, it might change the way school either finance, build, and design facilities. So it's something that we'll need to keep abreast of. And so there was a lot of good stuff, and recommend anybody on the next year, if they do plan on attending, a lot of good information. And so that will conclude my report if anybody has any questions. Oh, the other thing is, and I know the girls will like this, I brought some stuff from Gifted and Talented. Want to send out to somewhere in all this paperwork, but if anybody has any questions, feel free to ask me. There we go.
Do you think we should have copies of that?
Yeah,
that
actually,
you wrote, just this one. With the bills, that would be interesting that we could kind of, you know, keep up and follow and maybe read it and then know what you talk about when you guys can do that.
Actually, what kind of neat, it was the Friday before was the last day to file bills. And one of the bills, which I had met for work, I met Representative Isaac, and he talked about opting out of all state regulations as an opt-out. So it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of discussion in the state legislature as to testing, as to the accountability standards, as to not the regulations, but the mandates. And so the good thing is they're starting to be discussion compared to before there wasn't, and they wanted us to continue to add. So I'll pass this over to Tony so she can make some copies for us.
Mr.
And that will complete this one.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Searles, I know that on the Equity Center that they sent, I'm not sure, I can look in my email, the Equity Center said all the bills that have been, they made it was a nice little synopsis they gave of the bills. Let me see if I could.
That'd be really nice.
And then I could put it in the packet?
Yes.
Okay, because I held on to it and I said, I have to show this to somebody.
And you know, that's just
the beginning.
It's
going to
pare down as it goes.
Do you know what I mean? I just thought it would be, when I saw that.
Some anal person like myself.
I said, this is good, so I held it. So let me, okay.
So Tony, I'll look it for that.
Just tell them to give us our money back.
We already told them that. They didn't reply.
They're giving some money.
Okay. I'll take
us to the next item. Item E, discussion regarding status of research related to state and federal accountability requirements. Mr. Coronado?
I requested this item from our council to discuss the issues related to the issues with respect to the English language learners and what issues there are with respect to any basis for challenging the state and federal mandates with regards to the time for testing on our English language learners, and then asked our council to present to the board issues with respect to what the board might want to consider with respect to challenging those requirements under probably equal protection clauses and discrimination issues.
Thank you, Mr. Coronado, for President Rodriguez and members of the board. We've gone back. It's not an easy task to track back all the various laws that have been passed regarding the education of students where there are challenges and barriers to those students receiving what is viewed as a minimally adequate education. That, fortunately, is the standard by which lawsuits and legal challenges regarding funding, testing, and the provision of educational services are reviewed under. To give us our current framework, you have to go back to 2002. In January of 2002, President George W. Bush signed into law the No Child Left Behind Act, Nickleby, and it reauthorized the previously passed law called the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, but it made significant changes to that act. One of the things that they did is the standard by which Nickleby evaluates provision of educational services was changed. The new standard is what's called a validity clause, and the clause states that Nickleby assessments must be used for purposes for which assessments are valid and reliable and be consistent with relevant nationally recognized professional and technical standards. That sounds real good, but it's really a lot of fuzzy language. And it's been really hard for individual states to get a grip on how that's being applied. With Nickleby as a backdrop, then you have another layer, which is the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment in the federal constitution. And the Equal Protection Clause provides that no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. And with the backdrop of Nickleby and looking at the Equal Protection Clause, there were a variety of lawsuits that were challenging mostly funding mechanisms for educational services, federal funding mechanisms, and occasionally state funding mechanisms. The federal government then passed the Equal Education Opportunities Act, EEOA, which extended certain court rulings to all school districts, not just school districts that receive federal funds. And the EEOA law states that no state shall deny equal educational opportunity to an individual on account of his or her race, color, sex, or national origin, by the failure of the educational agency to take appropriate action to overcome language barriers that impede equal participation by its students in its instructional programs. So You have two really basic legal statutes, provisions that provide certain theoretical rights. One is the Equal Protection Clause, which is very broad, and then you have the Equal Educational Opportunities Act, which sounds like it is a little bit more specific. Unfortunately, in the course of research, you look at the United States Supreme Court, the Fifth Circuit, and the Sixth Circuit, of course, appeals have evaluated how these play with respect to funding and provision of educational services to students, and they generally fall on the side that they don't find violations of the Equal Protection Clause or the EEOA because of the standard being a minimally adequate education. As long as a student is receiving a minimally adequate education, they generally will not find a violation. Now, there have been some successful challenges to funding mechanisms. There have been challenges to the way students are taught at certain levels. Those have generally been brought by groups of students based on individual student rights in a class action type of setting, and they will file those suits claiming that a particular location, a regional school district is not providing proper educational opportunities to whatever segment of the population. One of the most famous cases is the Lao case. It's actually for immigrant Chinese children in California who are receiving a certain type of education. They actually found a portion of that case to be in violation of the Equal Protection Clause. That's one of the few. We actually have a San Antonio case where they are saying that there has not been a violation in a similar setting because of the minimally adequate educational standard. So what are we left with? With respect to how you would go about challenging one of two things, either the overall testing scheme that's in place, which we've been looking at obviously to say that it is unfair, it's not properly applied. The best course of action appears to be the lawsuit based on what's called a disparate impact theory. It's really hard to prove disparate treatment, which is disparate treatment being you have an individualized intent to single out a group or an individual and say we're going to treat them differently because of some protected characteristic. A disparate impact analysis doesn't look at the intent behind the law, it doesn't look at the intent behind the regulations or the implementation of that law, it looks at the overall effect. So it says, well, you have this law or this statute or rule in place, it has a good altruistic framework, but when you actually apply it, it's having an impact that's disparate to a certain group of students or a certain portion of the population. There are, not surprisingly, scores of law review articles, educational articles, saying that these challenges are ripe, that there is going to be a time when they're going to be made because of the way the testing is being applied for federal funding. And most of the commentary leans towards the challenge being towards the testing in general and coupled with using that testing to manage or determine what type of funding or the amount of funding the district is going to receive. I've made some calls and sent some emails. I've not received any response from anybody who said, yes, we're doing it. Yes, we're interested in doing it. We'll continue to look. I think that maybe at a conference when the board attends, and you all should ask the board members, the trustees, and see. I don't believe it's something that can be done financially on our own. You certainly could try. You could go that route, but I do think that Mr. Cornell's suggestion is still a better one. We try to find others that would be willing to move forward with that. A lot of that's going to require some board effort to make some connections and see if anybody else is interested in pursuing that type of a plan.
Mr. Chair, and to that end, I think one of the other is we've made that contact is also TASB.
I have not called TASB.
And one of those issues and that we could probably bring up, and I think one of the things that we could do is if maybe you could provide a Steve, a synopsis of your research and what it would take and develop a little bit further, where we might be able to make a presentation to the Far West School Board Association.
at one of their meetings and maybe even bring it up at some of the forums at our state TASB conference.
Far west
and then at the state. Maybe what we got to do is also go to MASBA. I think MASBA will be receptive to getting on board with helping us with the members of MASBA with respect to providing some kind of organization with other districts that might want to join this cause.
That's an excellent idea. That's a great idea.
And TASA as well, I think, should be contacted. I mean, it's no joy for superintendents.
Exactly.
And it is for
tomorrow, I'm going to Region 19 at the RAP. I can ask if anyone else is.
Yeah. I'm surprised that the media is not here. This stuff is really important to them as much as it sensationalized all the other things. Something
could
that's
maybe
probably
Gustavo write a press release that, the Kennedy Hill School District is seeking
assistance, and especially, I'd like
that we see this as a problem.
A discussion on fairness and unequal protection to some of our students based on language isn't that important.
Like Austin or, other newspapers, not just our local.
Right.
The other thing that we have thought about doing is you might reach out to RULAC or other groups that might be interested in. It really, for the school districts to do it, it's a little bit harder getting groups and individuals together.
And to that end, I am bringing up the issue to one of the RULAC meetings, and at probably the next district RULAC meeting, Paso, for consideration, and maybe to try to see if we could associate with respect with Mulder, maybe also to try and maybe see about getting a consortium or efforts with respect to just the school districts, RULAC, TASB, see if we can try to and I think at first we need to look, once we get organized, is to contact the proper authorities and maybe they can pay attention to this and make some changes. And if not,
have you talked to the feds
about the Department of Education?
Those are a letter to the feds.
Which ones?
The U.S. Department of Education.
We have the one still outstanding.
Both.
Yeah, it's still outstanding. Nobody cared.
That's not completely true. I think Mr. Rodriguez, not this one,
Jose
Rodriguez, wrote back.
That was all.
And I think, we had two, I think. I know Jose wrote back, and there was one other one.
Canto didn't reply.
Maybe we should send a follow-up letter to his boss, the Secretary of Education boss.
Oh,
if he's not going to respond yet. and indicate,
that we haven't heard from
you. Your secretary hasn't responded to our request. Please.
I told you about the phone answering. It's because they're all playing golf.
I can do that. Do it, preparing a follow up and just forwarding it on is not hard to do. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Can they directly?
Actually, we could send out a press release that nobody responded to.
With the exception of the ones that did, I know that there were two. I can't escape from which was the other.
I got Melissa's letter. You all got it, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He brought a nice letter.
Mm-hmm. I don't recall the other one. But it was just one.
This one?
I thought so.
I thought it was just
Maybe I'm mistaken.
One out of how many?
Mr. Jerry, we need to.
No.
Yes, sir.
10 of 12.
Can we bring in the next agenda item, and then that way we can have some discussion, because that's going to be part of the thing.
Item F is discussion of possible action to support legislation authorized by Senator Leticia Vandeput regarding school testing and educational requirements, including but not limited to bills relating to public school accountability, and of course, assessment instruments, bill number 240.
So, what we're looking at, Jane, is, and if you want to take some time to read the letter, that's a letter I was drafted, and if you wanted to add anything. When we visit with these individuals, we want to deliver this letter as well as we have a packet of our past resolutions to our state reps. And so, if you all want to take the time and then see if there's anything else that we need to add regarding whether it's testing or what were the three factors we were looking at? Testing.
Funding. Accountability, the testament, and funding.
Is there anything that needs to be? Well, I'll give everybody a minute.
Very good.
Rodriguez wanted to add some
fire.
Just fire.
Well, you know, the discussion on the that's been happening for decades. You know what? Without little or no accountability, and that needs to be addressed by our legislature. Let's put some more teeth
there. When y'all leaving?
6:05.
6:30 in the morning.
Did I email a copy of that?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Don't get edited.
Okay.
Let's just mark it up.
Anything?
I'm agreeable to say that, you know, that maybe later on in a follow-up we can present a little more, you know, on the basis that not only is this system of testing creating a situation where it can be manipulated, and they want to make an individual want to manipulate and cheat the system, is it also discriminatory?
Discriminatory, yeah.
And that is not something that was in that draft.
Right. I mean, every expert has testified on the funding issues where our system just got declared unconstitutional, our funding system state. All those experts have testified at that trial and the myriads of trials we've had before that. Clearly that no individual who comes in here to learn English from whatever other country that they can do it in less than 2 years. Yeah. Clearly, for sure not in less than a year. And most, you know, all those experts testified is that it takes at least minimum of 4 years for them to be able to become proficient. So I agree with the issue that we need to find alternative testing criteria or methods of testing them. Because the way I see it is, these standards aren't interested in the content, which is what they really say they're interested in. Because if they were, they'd say, you know, we don't think these students have learned the language, let's test them in their native language until they become proficient. Also test them in English to see how they're acquiring the language. But we need to test the content prior to their becoming fluent in that language. Let's really test the content. And the way you're sure you can do that is to test them in their native language. I mean, the federal system, I mean, federal laws require, they mandate to the point where they'll sue the district if we don't educate these kids in their native language when they first come in. It's beyond me how then they can make the jump that we're going to make them decide whether they've learned the content in less than a year in their foreign language to them. That's just beyond
it's the state of Texas that only allows English, right? Because they don't want the cost of the Spanish test.
Well, it's our, as a building principal, it's always
challenge that you have the Spanish test up until fifth grade. So, you know, when I was at elementary principal, I was happy and dumb, not knowing, you know, and all of a sudden when I went to, you know, it all of a sudden, you know, the more I was there, I said, wait a minute, what happens when I get to middle school? In middle school, it's English only. So you get a little, you get a kiddo from any place, Guatemala, Mexico, El Salvador, and which I have gotten at AMS. And we have one year to assess them in English. Well, it's absurd. And the building principals know it's absurd. The educators know it's absurd. The people that don't know it's absurd is that legislature. And we're living in this every day. And, you know, and when I look at it, and when even we look at the things that we're getting, then we get, so that's at middle school. Then you get a high school kid that comes in who's 16 years old, who has come in with education from Mexico City, say, and that person has to be assessed in 1 year. We have to take them in as a junior, or sometimes it could be a sophomore, it depends on the credits, as you all know. Then they're going against our accountability, and they're going to be assessed in 1 year. It's absurd. And it's, you know, if we told the medical profession that you have to only, you know, here, you're going to do brain surgery, but oh, by the way, the manual and the equipment is made in China, and here is the manual. And excuse me, you're going to be operating on people next week.
Next year.
It's the same thing. I mean, that is the absurdity of it all. So I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that everything that Mr. Rodriguez and Mr. Coronado say, I do think what we do have to do is beat the drum and keep on beating the drum a little harder. I do think we go to the National School Board meetings. I think we have to keep on talking and keep on saying until somebody hears us and maybe present something which I had asked, you know, maybe at the, I don't know if there's one, and I'd have to look for proposals that we could even see if that, especially in Texas, I think we need to start in Texas, and present something as a unified school board and talk and maybe call it the absurdity of it all. It was something like that we could actually present at a statewide conference and see if we could then get it, because I do think people have had enough. And I think what Mr. Blanco was saying is totally true. We cannot do it like Goliath, like David against Goliath, and we're going to keep on pushing. But I think if we make it a more concentrated effort and just keep on beating that drum, we might be able to get something.
Does the EEOA provide for attorney's fees to the victor, Mr. Blanco?
You know, I don't recall. I didn't get that detailed into it. I'll check.
The other issue that we need to look at, I think what we need to do is also put in there that, you know, we haven't gotten a response from the commission. We have not gotten a response from the federal. So we're trying to find guidance, but we need to step it up as legislators.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that our legal counsel continue with these letters as he's been doing. Don't let down the banner here. Let's keep the banner high and pursue this to the point that we have tonight, as well as our PIO office to write some, informative sort of updates on what we're doing.
Can we just get that direction, and then on this, what we do need is with the changes that were discussed, if y'all could approve that, so that way we could present that tomorrow to our legislative.
Do you have the change marks up on the letter so Tony can make it?
Do I have?
Do you Did you mark up a change? You said you wanted to add a sentence.
Well, the discussion we had here, the one we'll send you on, then also.
We don't have to put that in. We can, for now, we can.
This is a good start.
I think we need to just add some more teeth to it.
What do you want? That's the part that I don't have that. But
Central, what were you saying?
Well, I think we can, for tomorrow's sake, we can do that, and we'll redraft another letter with a little more fire to it.
Because
get to the point.
This is going to the state and the Senate. I mean, the House and the Senate side when it comes to education committee. And so, I think we need to add just that we're waiting for a follow up still from the commissioner of education.
I think we can add a sentence towards the end that this issue has been addressed to others and we've not received a response. That's easy enough.
And can you write to the president too?
You sent a copy of the what's it, Mr. Duncan, to the president.
You did already?
We did, yeah.
That he's not responsive, please.
He's not responsive.
Well, I did make a motion.
We don't have it for action, no. And so we will continue with the follow-up. And then on the next, either at Mrs. Gonzalez's, it'll probably be at Ms. Gonzalez's meeting with her. Permission, we'll give you a further update as we move forward with the contract. That's okay. Contacts with CASA, being all the, and we'll just keep the board updated. Does it go to Mr. Coronado?
Oh,
he is audit facilities planning.
Okay.
Instruction person. I'd rather take it to your
Yes, I'm sorry.
Steve, we're going to make those corrections, right?
I will.
And don't we need guidance for that letter? Do we need a vote on that?
No, you just have to authorize the approval for you to take it with you.
Okay. Good. Is that okay?
I'm going to go for him to take
it. The proposed letter to Senator Ben.
Yes, for the one from Ms. Van Hoof, yes.
I move to approve our delegation to Austin to take this letter to Senator Letizia Van Hoof.
Or to the...
And to everybody else.
The committee.
The committee.
And on our legislative committee.
All the legislative committees, all the legislators.
With the corrections.
With the corrections.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
President. I'm yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
I have a copy. She was mentioning Eddie Lucio, which is a senator from Brownsville, and he's the vice chair of the committee. I'll take this to the next item.
Item 4 is open forum. We have one individual signed up to speak, Ms. Lily Molinella.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, members of the board. I'm going to talk on two issues real quick. I'm going to start with the one you just finished talking about. You all are talking about, and I agree totally with everything that you say, about the barriers of language, but you're forgetting one other thing. As an educator and teacher of these students, I receive from WADIS basically, they don't only come with language barriers, but they come with academic barriers because there's a lack of opportunity of education for them. They don't go to school. In some cases, I have fifth graders who have not gone to school for 1 or 2 years, but because of their age, they are placed in fifth grade. So, you have that on top of the language. Now, under tax, the testing tax, there used to be a, I don't know what you call it, but new immigrants that came in to the United States were exempt from taking the state test up to 3 years. That didn't only address the language barrier, but it addressed the academic barrier. And yes, Ms. Brigham, you're correct. Right now, up to fifth grade, they have the option to take the Spanish test. But if they're coming with no education, they're not going to be successful at that.
Absolutely.
Either.
I agree with you.
And I agree that if they come in at high school, you know, they're stuck taking it in English type thing. So just wanted to add that there. The other concern that I have is, and I'm here as a taxpayer and a CBAC member, between the last committee meeting on the 13th and now, I've been enlightened with some new information, and so I'm a little concerned about Johnson's controlled project overview that we received. So I'm here to ask you to look it over regarding the windows, all right, and for the following reasons. I'm not comfortable with what they told us at the committee meeting, that they had taken samples, because CBAC's issue was insulation and windows, right, that apparently were not going to be covered or replaced, right? And I'm concerned because what they mentioned is that they took samplings from one school, one campus, to determine that the windows did not need to be replaced. This is the way I understood it. Did not need to be replaced, or that insulation didn't need to be placed at the other campuses. Well, I don't think that's the right way to do it. For number one, the age of the buildings of the campuses, let's just say Childress, Davenport, and Gunnity Elementary. The age of those three campuses, it's not the same. So you can't take a sample from, let's say, Childress and determine that CE doesn't need the replacement of the windows, all right? The other issue was that they were told that the campuses were re-roofed. That's not true. Not all the campuses were re-roofed. Not with the last bond. They haven't been re-roofed with this one, all right? And my concern comes from CE, because at CE I've come to find out that there are some windows in some of our wings that don't open, and there are some that don't close. So with that, it's like, okay, there goes the energy cost savings. If they don't close, how are we going to save money? There goes all that cool air going outside. The reason that they don't close, I don't know. If it's due to maintenance, that they haven't been kept up type thing, I'm not sure. But my point is that I believe that before Johnson's Controls determines that the windows do not need to be replaced, they need to go to every single campus and live and see for themselves, are they double paned, are they working, before they determine that they're not going to replace them, that they're just going to reseal them. All right, it's just like if I say, okay, Ms. Mendoza, my house is exactly like yours, and because your windows are perfect, then I'm going to have refrigerated air, but they don't have to look at my windows. Do you see my point? I mean, I don't think that that's right. So I think that they need to take the time to actually look at each campus that is involved in receiving the refrigerated air. And I realize that the deadline is coming, but I believe the deadline is for ordering the units type thing. I don't believe that this is going to in any way stop that part. The other issue was that Mr. Cardenas also asked about the heating strip. Do you recall Ms. Searles and Mr. Coronado, maybe Mr. Medina? He asked Ms. Matthews if she could check into other campuses or other districts or businesses that were using the heating strip to just let us know and to make us a little bit more comfortable, since we were not getting the heating portion, to find out how that heating strip works for them. And I also understand that all of this, you know, you're thinking, maybe why are you worrying about? Because Johnson Control said that it's guaranteed, the energy savings is guaranteed. And the way I understand it is if the district doesn't see these savings that they're projecting, then in so many words, they eat. The way I understood it, right? The cost of what they're assuring us that we're going to save by going refrigerated air. That's the way I understood it. The other thing is, what does HVAC stand for? Because I keep hearing people say that HVAC was not on the bond. So can someone clarify what HVAC stands for? Anybody?
That is heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Thank you. That's exactly what I thought it was. Because HVAC is on the bond. HVAC is on the bond. And that's heating. So my point is, you keep talking about that the heating portion was not on the bond, but in essence it was. It's under HVAC. And HVAC stands for heating, ventilation, air conditioning. So that's just something to think about when you say that the heating element was not in the bond. And I'm here again as CBAC, transparency, taxpayer. So we need to be careful when we say that HVAC was not in the bond for the heating element that Ms. Gonzalez brought up, which is something CBAC brought up as well. So I'd appreciate it if you kind of consider my concerns, because I know that this is up for in the consent agenda. Just all I'm asking is that they go to the campuses and actually look at each campus, look at the windows, and see and determine if in fact they do not need to be replaced. We can work it with just being resealed. Thank you.
Item 5A, TASI Employee Opinion Survey Report, Ms. Carrasco.
Come back next month. There it is, one time. Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, committee members, Ms. Brigham. Back in September the 27th, the district contracted with the Texas Association of School Boards to conduct an employee opinion survey. And this survey was conducted district-wide on December 4th through December 20th. And so we've gotten our results, and Ms. Buscavena is here this evening to present the results of that online survey that we had done with TASB.
What were the dates again on that? I'm sorry.
We contracted in September.
Okay.
And the survey was conducted between December 4th and December 20th.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening again. Board President, board members, and Ms. Brigham. I'm glad to have the opportunity to be back working with the district. Tonight, I am presenting information on the results of the employee opinion survey. The survey was conducted to assess employee attitudes and level of job satisfaction and working conditions. The survey was developed in collaboration with the district, and it was available to employees in the online version in English and in Spanish. So we're going to begin with the first slide here. The data was collected again, as Martha indicated, in December. And the survey was provided to the employees. It was emailed to the employee directly by TASB. They received a link in the email to the survey, and the confidentiality of the information, individual responses, was maintained as the email was directly sent to the employee and the raw data or the responses was returned directly to TASB. And so that was a commitment to the district and to the employees as far as confidentiality of individual employee responses. Next slide.
Again, all employees were invited to participate. There was 892 employees at the time that we conducted the survey. And the survey statements were provided in the form of a Likert scale, which is a range of statements from strongly agree to strongly disagree, and an option for no opinion or not applicable was provided to the employees. The survey contained 11 categories of questions, and these, of course, were listed in your report. They included the, and that's on page one, demographics, job satisfaction and engagement, working conditions, compensation and benefits, relationship with coworkers, relationship with supervisor, district communication, district leadership, campus environment, curriculum and instruction, and student discipline. The response rate was exceptional. You had 81% of your employees, meaning that 726 employees completed the survey. The average that we see is in the high 60s to low 70s. So kudos to your employees. They participated in a very important process to assist the district in determining their level of job satisfaction. We feel 95% sure that the data is accurate, and of course there's always a validity error rate of plus or minus 2% in our data reports. The majority of employees responded favorably regarding their level of job satisfaction. They like their jobs, they feel good about accomplishments, understand what is expected of them, and they find their work meaningful and challenging. They feel the support, the trust, and teamwork of their coworkers. They feel safe in their building, have the tools that they need, and are satisfied with work hours and workload. Again, these are an overview of the top five contributors that they indicated were important to them. For teachers, they felt proud of their campus performance, feel that they are being treated professionally and are held to high professional standards. And they agree that the student code of conduct is consistently enforced, and they receive the support for student resolving disciplinary problems. The agree and strongly agree responses provided by the employees were combined for the to provide the positive response analysis that is contained in this report. For the representation of the employee participation by job type, teachers reflected the largest participation group at 46%. This group represents about 78% of the teachers. The lowest participation rate, and this is on page 3 of your report, the lowest participation rate was your auxiliary support employees, which the participation rate was 64%. You do see there that their representation as an employee group was 19% of the total employee group. But as far as their participation in their responses, they did have the lowest response rate. The administrative and other professional employees' participation rate was 100%. These were the two categories of employees
who we identified that participated in the report. They all did. As far as the respondent profile, again, your teachers being the largest employee group at 46%, this represents 331 teachers. And of those teachers that participated, that's 78% of your total teachers in the district. 41% of these 331 teachers that participated were at an elementary campus. The takeaway on this is that the responses or the summary of the responses are influenced partly by the participation of your teachers, because they are the largest group that participated in the survey, and so that's just for information purposes. The responses also were limited to top five choices, and so as we move into what the employees perceive to be the most important as far as their level of job satisfaction or the contributors to job satisfaction, we look at the top cited contributor being the meaningful work. This represents 63% of your employees, indicating that meaningful work is the most important, or they agree that that is the most important to them. Other items that they agree that are of importance are the opportunities to use skills and abilities, compensation and benefits, job security, and learning opportunities. These were the top five contributors that were identified by the employee group. The least cited contributors to job satisfaction included the working relationship, and it was the recognition for work and the safe working conditions, which were identified at 33% of the respondents. Again, I'd like to note, as far as on the compensation and benefits response, it is very typical for compensation and benefits contributor to level of job satisfaction to be third in the list. It's not uncommon to see this, and in our experience conducting these employee opinion surveys, it is very common for that to be in third place. Working conditions or meaningful work is consistently number one or the top contributor that they view. When we drill down to the meaningful work statement, nearly all of your employees like the work that they do. We are looking at almost 100% of the employees participated. So they feel they like the work that they do. They also feel that they have accomplished what they need to accomplish. That's 95%. So this is typically a high response from employees. They like what they do, they enjoy their work, and so this follows the pattern that we see in employee responses. When we're looking at the skills and abilities, more than 50% of the employees continue to cite that the opportunities to use skills and abilities were important to them, and cited this as second to the meaningful work. And then as we move to the compensation and benefits, again, this was third as the contributor to job satisfaction. Nearly all of the employees are satisfied with the amount of leave benefits that the district provides. This is a very
common and typical response pattern that we see. Employees tend to be satisfied more with their employee leave benefits than with their compensation and pay. It is not uncommon for most of us to feel that we should be paid more. And this is reflective of the employee responses.
We feel that way too. Every
night. Not enough.
I know. Long nights. What's most notable of this indicator here is that your auxiliary group had the most positive view of their pay being fair at 73%, with 70% of them indicating that they felt that their pay was competitive with other districts. Whereas your administrators, that's 50% of them, felt that their pay is not fair. So just a further breakdown of that. Moving into job security, your employees feel supported by their coworkers and their supervisors. 87% of them feel a sense of loyalty, support, and teamwork. Again, very favorable response rates from your employees regarding job security. Opportunities for learning. This was asked of all employees, and nearly 80% of all of your employees feel that they receive the training that they need to do their job effectively, and they receive useful feedback on their job performance. Learning opportunities for teachers, this was the response rate, and this was only provided to teachers as far as the participation for this question, and it was primarily under the curriculum and instruction, and nearly all teachers responded with that they have the opportunity to collaborate with other teachers, and also a high percentage rate of opportunities to learn from other teachers. They receive feedback at 86%, and I have to take a look at the screen because my eyes must be tired. The small print, I forgot to bring my reading glasses. So again, favorable responses from not only your all-employee group, but also from your teachers as well. So we're going to move into recommendations, and basically when we view this, the recommendation, this is more so the employee morale, how your employees feel about the district. And most of your employees would recommend the district to a friend as a good place to work. So you have a very supportive and engaged group of employees with the district.
Very welcome.
As for district leadership, two-thirds of employees expressed trust in the leadership team to act in the best interest of the students. This response rate was the lowest response percentage-wise to the questions of all of the questions that were provided. But keep in mind, two-thirds, this is almost 6 out of 10 employees feel that district leadership is doing and taking actions and that is in the direction of the best interest of students. The majority expressed a positive opinion about the district leadership. What I want to note on this is that 10% of employees, which is somewhat larger than we typically see, did not provide an opinion. And so because of that, that might be a reason why the percentage participation was lower, or the percentage response rate was lower than the response rate to the other questions as well. This was a little bit higher than what we've seen, but keep in mind that you had a very high participation rate, much higher than what we've seen in other districts. And so this 10% that did not participate or identified themselves as no opinion, they did participate, but they provided a no opinion to this one specific question.
What was the date of the survey?
December
5th through the 20th. December 5th through the 20th.
Employee engagement is what we try to look at when we look at the district communication response rate. We received positive ratings from most of the employees here, with 90% of the employees understanding how their efforts contribute to the district's goals. So they individually they feel they understand their role and the contribution of their job to the overall direction and goals of the district. Fewer feel that they are able to express concerns to district leaders, and that's just information there. For campus environment, only teachers, other professionals, and instructional aides responded to the statements about campus environment. Campus administrators were not included in this group, since this was measuring the campus environment provided by the campus administrator. And 89%, what's notable here is 89% responded that the principal treats them with respect, which is, again, it's high, and is a little bit higher than what we've seen in some of the other surveys that we've conducted. Curriculum and instruction. Only teachers responded to this question about curriculum and instruction. And here you can see that 80% of your teachers have or feel that they have the sufficient resources and materials to do their job. And again, good response rate. You do have a percentage, 65% of teachers that feel they don't have the appropriate resources for the special ed populations. And so that may just, that may be something that you need to follow up or look into a little bit further. And then on instructional technology, again, a high response rate, 74% of your teachers feel that they have the sufficient access to instructional technology resources. Continuation with curriculum and instruction. Teachers, again, feel that they are being held to very high standards, are treated as professionals. This is at 92% of your teachers feeling that way. In regards to student discipline, Most of your teachers are satisfied with the student discipline support that they receive at the campus from their campus administrator. And that is, let me see, you want to move the slide? Oh, you're in the way. So we have 86% of your teachers feel that the principal provides leadership in setting and maintaining the discipline behavioral students standards for students. And again, the student code of conduct, you've got 77% of your teachers feel that the student code of conduct is consistently and fairly enforced. The levels of agreement or responses for these are higher than we typically see. They're higher than usual. So you have your teachers that whose responses indicate strong support from principals for student discipline. And we move into our comments section. 139 employees provided responses. That represents 19% of those employees. The largest responses that the employees provided were accolades about the district. So confirming that your employees feel a high sense of level of satisfaction with their work and being employed in the district. There were other comments that were provided. These are listed in your report on page 11, and they were related to compensation, supervisor issues, lack of resources, instruction curriculum issues, district communications, favoritism, and district leadership. The percentages were much smaller. Again, your 32% of the responses or comments provided by the employees were accolades about the district. So this is the first year that an employee opinion survey was conducted. And it sets a baseline for future trend analysis. And we can go back. We'd like to go back every year, no more than 2 years, to compare the data and identify trends. Once now that you have this baseline, and to, again, assist the district in identifying issues that are related to the level of job satisfaction. And so we hope that we're able to continue to work with the district and provide the additional analysis with future employee opinion surveys. Any questions?
I'll start. Does anybody have any questions? It was a well-in-depth report. A lot of good feedback. Some of it was positive, but some of it allowed us to mention it. Sierra, you no questions? No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to present the name. Thank you.
Preliminary bond credit rating presentation, Mrs. Aguirre.
apologize, guys. You know, just to point this out, I'm really, with respect to the responses we get from employees, these responses we got, even at the time that was really during a critical point of the issues we face, and I'm talking right in the month when this happened, obviously there's some issues here that we need to look at to kind of focus on, like, for example, in, you know, the finding on page 19, you know, I think we, you know, probably ought to, with respect to our safety committee, one of the lowest ranking items on there was a safe working condition. So, you know, maybe it's food for thought that we ought to get our safety committee kind of back on, you know, being more robust in terms of making, you know, people aware that it is important. The more that people think it's important to them about safe working environment, the better the atmosphere is to keep, you know, accidents and injuries from happening, I think so. You know, overall, I feel pretty good about the results that all the employees have given, but there are a few items that maybe we take a look at in terms of, you know, I see something about supervisors and, you know, issues. So, that all relates, you know, those issues really relate to really what we're trying to do that we really wanted to do this year, and that's the service-oriented environment in our district that we really never completely got off the ground because of obviously other pressing issues we've been dealing with. But I think next year we maybe ought to concentrate on that service orientation that we wanted to really focus on this year, and I think it will improve some of these things I have.
Preliminary bond credit rating presentation.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, board members. Ms. Brigham, this evening, Ms. Rovina from First Southwest is here to assist in presenting to you a preliminary draft of our bond rating presentation that we will be taking forward with us as we begin the process to sell the next series of bonds in May and June and the upcoming months. And so Ms. Rovina, Mr. Reveles, and I worked together to create this presentation. It's a draft, it's a starting point, and we'd very much like to hear if you have any recommendations or suggestions in what we can add to the presentation that we'll be presenting before you. So the contents,
just real quickly. Good evening, Board President, Board Members, Ms. Brigham. My name is Maria Urbina, I'm from Southwest Company. And I just wanted to add to what Martha was mentioning. Back last month, the Finance Committee instructed us to go back to our desk, basically, and put together a good and concise presentation for the board as we make a trip out to visit with the rating agencies. It's been about 5 years or so that the board has not met with the rating agencies face-to-face, so we really wanted to put together the best story possible for Canatillo. And as Martha was mentioning, this presentation will guide the entire team through the presentation at the ratings meetings. And if there's anything that we can do to improve it, please let us know. As we had mentioned last time to the Finance Committee and to some of the board members, if you were not present, we're hoping to go visit the rating agencies in Dallas at the May 10th, approximately. So that's when we're going to be finalizing the presentation. So we still have a little bit of time, but we wanted to get in front of you with ample time to get all of your feedback. And with that, I will let Martha go through the presentation.
The contents of the presentation, of course, will have introductions, an overview of the district, an economic update, financial information, capital improvement programs, and the tax rate impact. Of course, we have not, gotten a direct confirmation as to whether or not these are the only attendees that will be participating in the credit rating presentation. However, this slide would basically have photos and names of the individuals that would be present when we present to the bond rating agencies.
One thing I did want to mention before market continues, the way that this presentation was laid out, you know, First Southwest, you know, we have a lot of different clients and we have a lot of meetings, and Martha has been through, you know, a number of meetings as well. We've tried to put together this presentation in such a way that we present the best story, as I mentioned a little earlier. Is Martha was saying we're going to have a few areas that we're going to cover. The first, obviously, is going to be the introduction. Some of these rating analysts have not met any of the board members, so this is going to be an opportunity for the president and some of the others to actually give that summary of the county. But before, just on me, I know that that Martha will be going through the presentation. I do want to say that all these sections basically have a strategy in mind. The first thing is to introduce the board members, obviously the management, you know, and then staff, which basically lays out the entire story. The second, and I think the big picture item, will be to have the governance discuss a little bit about the economic update of the entire region, which is really important to the financial, which is something that I know that Martha will be talking about a lot at that particular meeting. So every single one of these sections, as Martha's going through them, it has a strategy and a reason in place, because this presentation will answer, if not all, most of the questions that will be asked by the rating analyst. And in conjunction with this particular presentation, we will be giving the rating analyst the official statement and all your financials up to date, so they have a good idea as to where you stand in terms of your rating. And with that, I apologize.
So within looking at the overview of their district, we start by providing the mission statement of the district. Then we'll be providing a map of Canapillo. We will be presenting to Fitch Ratings and Standard & Poor's, and although they are familiar with the region, that doesn't necessarily mean that they've been here, so we thought a map of the district would give them an idea of where in Texas and in El Paso Canapillo sits. The next slide would be a slide presenting our campuses that the district currently has. And so we would do some talking points too, you know, as to maybe enrollment, maybe the general area, you know, just different facts and stats regarding the campuses. This next slide would be the feature school, the pre-K-8, that is currently in construction. And so, of course, there will be, because of the bond sale was all, you know, has a big, will be impacted by this camp, or this campus will be impacted by the bond sale. You know, definitely have to play out the story as to what our future school will be. And then we talk about innovative programs. In this slide, we talk about the different activities the district currently has, and if there's something here that you know, maybe a specific program you didn't think about or need to add to, this is, part of the slides where we would add to the different programs.
So before Martha moves forward, this is an important section for the board members, for the board of trustees, the president. When we're in Dallas and we're talking to the rating analyst, this section really needs to summarize everything that makes Canapillo what it is. Your schools, your future, your enrollment, your growth. So this is a very important section that we ask that we get some feedback. You know, if you feel that we can improve it, please let us know. We have a month to do that.
The next section that we'll present is the economic update. And so this one gives the picture of where we are within the city, within, you know, the economy here in El Paso and in the state. We start by identifying the district's top employers. And and then we move on to developing areas. And this is where we start talking about all the different projects that we currently have going on in, within our district, you know, from our roads to our residential areas, and any, again, and anything else that you might think of that we haven't included, this is where we need your help in adding. And then this next slide is items not yet on the tax roll. So what's to come? Because of course we need to present the fact that we're, you know, we're prospering, we're moving forward, we're growing, and so we need facilities. We need, you know, we have the potential to move, you know, grow.
I have a question.
Yes.
Where's the resort and retirement communities?
The resort.
The resort and retirement.
Adjacent to Franklin. And Gustavo's not here because he's the one that helped us with this.
Only resort I can think of is like Rainbow Lake.
Yeah, I think he just meant the Northeast retirement plan community.
Maybe it ought to.
I'll make a change.
Kind of, you know, we're stretching it.
It might be the fact that part of the city's master plan.
But it's not resort or retirement.
Right, it's not resort. It's retirement related, and that's with the conjunction with the water utilities.
Yeah, of that 4,000 acres.
Right, but that's
exactly it. It's subject to interpretation.
Yeah. Something we think is a resort.
Excuse me.
Just
why are you looking at me?
You're wrong. It's a resort. You just walk over to the park.
Subject to interpretation. Oh,
okay.
I have a question. I know, I'm not sure, and I did talk to Gustavo, and I do have a presentation that somehow, with my movement of my computer and my discs, that I will find within the week, I have quite a bit that we can add to this, okay, as far as the projection growth and all that. If I don't find it tomorrow, Martha, I will notify Dr. Watto.
Okay.
And I'll have it sent again.
Okay?
Because I did have I know I have it on a disc. And I know it on, no, a CD. Oh. And I know it, I have it burnt on a CD. And I probably didn't, you know, identify the CD. And I'm not sure which office it's in. So that will be corrected this week. Okay, so you could probably have about a couple more slides as far as the increase enrollment, as far as the projected over 5 years, I have that. And then I have some growth patterns as far as the number of rooftops.
Thank you. So this next slide here, you know, as you were referring to, the growth patterns. And so we put a couple of bullets there. And again, you know, we have this on the slide. However, you know, we talked to all the development going on. And then the impact on CISD. We've talked about a lot of growth, a lot of development, and how is it going to impact CISD? And so referencing it, it does say draft because it needs to be updated. But basically, we'll do a projection on our growth pattern.
And let me just say that, you know, this entire section happens to be also another important section within this presentation. And I'm asking, you know, from the board, you know, anybody that's going to be in attendance, to really think about this particular section, because I think that there's a really huge story in Canutillo, okay? The last time that the board met with the rating agencies face-to-face was maybe roughly about 5 years ago, and I think we need to kind of go back and say, look, you know, 5 years ago, this is where we were, and look at us now, you know, in terms of our value, you know, where have we grown? Really put a specific presentation where they can be wowed, because the numbers, yes, they speak to themselves, but it really, the story comes from you.
I have a question, if I may. Ms. Urbina, on that, as far as like where we were and where we're going, would it be advantageous, do you think, if we show, because we have the district divided into attendance zones and where those attendance zones have increased. So things like that you want to
anything that you feel that really tells a story. I mean, in terms of, you know, your programs, you know, programs in terms of the schools themselves, or even now just talking about, okay, where is Canutillo going, you know, the value, you know, the region itself. Any of that information that you think would be worthwhile, would, you know, we want to include in this presentation.
If I might, what I would like to see is, and I don't know, maybe Gustavo might have some access to where we have the front page of when the Cimarron Park and where it's coming. The other, on the other side, we have the Loop 375, which is huge.
UNC.
UNC. but all that, yeah. The trying to think of headlines where we could just show those headlines where
we could. Oh, you could almost do like a mosaic of all
we
the
CTG,
headlines.
Yes. Almost 1 million square feet of retail right here on this corner. I don't know if that's included.
Okay, well, you know, because I do think that I do have some of that information, but I, Martha, what I'll do is, and I'll also look at the GIS sensor maps. And I think we could probably put a couple of them in. Are we presenting to, are we just bringing the presentation like with a handout, or do we present via a screen?
Okay, so basically what I foresee happening on the day of the rating meetings is we will, you know, meet, you know, for about an hour and a half for Fitch and an hour and a half for S&P. We have this presentation, which will be a handout for them, okay? But I will send that over to them a few days in advance. In addition to the presentation, we will also give them the official statement, financial statements, and everything that they need to ask questions of you on that day.
Okay.
Pretty much they, before we see them, they pretty much do a forensic audit of us, of the board.
They already have a lot of information.
They'll ask, you know, they'll know even a certain agenda item and say, what happened with this agenda item, and see how it gets better.
One thing that I will tell you about the process of the presentation itself, we have about an hour and a half, as I mentioned. The thought process is to have the governing body, you know, with, you know, the president and maybe some of the board members, give an introduction to them about everything. That's why we kind of laid out the presentation that we talk about Canutillo. So we let the governance do all of that. We let the governance talk about the region as well, where you see the growth, commercial, everything that has to do with, you know, the business aspect of your region. Then we get into some of the details about management. Financing. That's where we have you and we have Martha, you know, basically give a presentation. And as Martha moves along in this presentation, we'll kind of let you know who we need to have speaking at that meeting. And I'll tell you that the way that we have basically structured the meetings, we're gonna have you fly out the night before, and we're gonna sit down and we're actually gonna talk, okay, who's gonna do what. And so first thing tomorrow, you know, which will be the rating meetings, everybody will know exactly what to do. But this at least gives us a guide, okay?
Thank you.
Perfect.
The CAD, our Central Appraisal District, has a, well, we all pay for it. It's called pictography, and it's actually a picture of anything you want to see that we have. And I think it would be really, you know, they took pictures this past year. They fly over and they do everything. Yes. It's a flyby, it's, you know, air, it's satellite. They're awesome pictures. And that might give you a then and now over 3 years. They can give you 3 years ago, and they can give you this past year. And then you could, you know, maybe give a comparison. This is how much we're growing. These are the things that have happened in our district from a bird's eye view. It might be a, you know, a nice learning tool to add.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Cordova.
You know, one of the other things that we need is probably a slide of information from Mr. Wachtel about the projected growth and the students
well,
and stuff.
Exactly what
but apart from that, we also wanted to show the number of platted subdivisions.
I have
how many homes are coming in apart from that. We had that in our last presentation when we went to present to Fitch and Standard & Poor. Additionally, now that we have even more commercial, which we projected for them last time we met, is we actually should show pictures of the Trans Mountain construction project, the spur, all the, you know, really the construction of our major interchanges was the freeway and Trans Mountain
area.
I mean, this is just completely night and day from, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
You know, also to remember, Martha, we did do that. We'll have to look in the board packet. I do believe I presented Dr. Wachtel's latest, which was in October and November. So I that I presented in a board packet. So we could bring that up too.
Okay.
Is that, I mean, that for supplemental information?
I didn't get a copy of that. This next section would be the financial information. And so we present an overview of the last couple of years of our revenue and expenditures. And so we've got, you know, from year 2008 to 2012, that has been actually on. And then we've also got a slide on our fund balance, and that's also an overview of the last 6 years.
Okay.
This next slide would be the 2013 budget highlights, because we're not quite finished with the year and it certainly won't be audited by the time we go present. What I did is present a couple of bullet points on different items that, you know, we address and with our focus on our students and our community. And so again, if you think of something else that was, yes.
I know this was a budget highlights, but should you put in any of the IMA, you know, how we did, I know you put in the instructional technology, but that wireless project, which is a 3-year project, I think we could put that in, that it's not affecting the budget, but how it is, it's increasing the access and, you know, we're using state initiative money.
Maybe our buses, too. Yeah, that we have that continuing bus budget.
Okay. Anything that shows that we're planning and that we're using capital expense in a thoughtful, provoking manner, that we, you know, like absolutely the buses. And same thing like with using those IMA funds, you know, that we have a 3-year projected, everything, you know, it's a sustainable program that we have a plan for it. I think any of those might.
Okay. You know what's really good about what you brought up in that point is that as we're going through the rating presentation, you know, and if somebody's talking about these numbers, you know, feel free to say, you know what, this is something else that we're doing, just like that, just like you brought it up, you know, it's kind of an informal setting, and you're going to be able to bring some of those highlights, and, you know, something else will come up at that point.
We have done so much in strategic planning in the last, you know, the last couple of months that we've looked forward to. So I do think that
a couple of slides maybe, that would be great.
This next slide is our taxable assessed values. And again, it's a picture, you know, from the 2003 and projections through 2017.
Yeah, that's a good snapshot. Yeah.
Then we've got our top 10 taxpayers.
Okay, Mama, you don't get that slide. You don't get that slide, Mama.
So basically, just so that they can get an idea of evaluations of
good one.
Our value. And then our next section is capital improvement program. This is very important because, of course, this is the bond sale. And what are we going to do with it? And so, Several highlighted the major projects that are in process or, planned to be. And so, you know, he goes from the pre-K to the gym additions to the facility upgrades or multi-purpose rooms that will be built. He provided it in two slides. The other district-wide general, you know, upgrades that we're working on, lighting,
the retrofits.
ADA retrofits.
The retrofits.
And then let's talk about our election, our bond and TRE election. And so that's the part where we were talking about how the support we had from our community, which is very important to them as well. They want to know that we have a community that's supporting the district. So, you know, he put a couple of the different headlines or articles that are, noted.
I think what you're missing there is the fact that only one other school district in Texas has ever done this before.
Yeah.
And the TRE at the same time. So that just shows, furthermore, the support.
Especially in the economic downturn.
And then we talk about, you know, we've got the current projects in place and know that we have future growth, we know that we are going to have future capital needs, and this is a part where, you know, we talk, are we going to need other campuses? Yes, we will. Are we going to need, you know, so these are some items that we thought of. However, if there's additional ones that you'd like to, you know, for me to ask, this is a slide where we talk about what our future brings to us.
May I add, I think in this particular section, it would be wise for us to somehow let the rating agencies know, because they'll ask about the 2011 bond program. And so back in 2011, we sold some bonds. And at this time, we are working with X number of projects, you know, and I think you mentioned earlier, you know, a certain number of them are already 100% designed. You know, we need to let them know where we are on that process. And then basically lead them into, and the reason we're here today is because we're trying to go for the second tranche, which will complete the entire bond program of 2011. And talk about everything that you've done so far, you know, as hiring, you know, people to help you through the program, you know, just anything and everything that you can think of. I think this is the moment where you really let them know where you are so far in terms of your projects. Because what are the reasons, and all the questions that they have for you, they want to know is, how are you in your district financially in growth, and how are you as a district, as a board, going to try to accommodate for the future? And so everything in your responses has to be like, okay, we've got a plan. And so I think this is a perfect opportunity to let them know where you are today in your 2011 program.
I think some of the slides that were presented to us about our employee support as well for the district, and we put some of the slides about how,
the employee,
what our employees
survey.
Feel about
absolutely.
How the district is doing, and whether or not they're, so, and maybe some of the surveys that are coming through pretty shortly from the students and...
I think that's an excellent idea.
I think future capital needs, you might also want to include aging infrastructure.
I figured they would, but thank you for saying it, Mr. Mitchell, but I didn't have to say it.
Things, isn't it?
That's
a good
idea.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a major one.
Now we've got our tax rate thing, that's our next section. So these are the assumptions that we are provided by our financial advisors when they look at our actual ADA and our valuations and where we're going as far as our funding, you know, EDA, IFA.
And we'll add, let me just say that these are very basic. We just wanted to give you an idea, but we're going to add a few more slides, you know, to talk a little bit more about the bond itself. And then will be assumptions that we use, and then the way it's going to impact your tax. Okay.
and our tax rate impact.
Kevin, going back to 2011, the bond, Kevin, the board passed the tax relief effort. I don't know if that, we did 3 years before the community felt
the actual impact of the
tax. Actually, we never felt on a bond.
And I think, you know, if we, I think there's some way we could slip that in, I'm not sure, but.
I think that what we could say, I think what would be wise to say is that, you know, also given some of the growth, assessed valuation growth, you know, that has helped, you know, mitigate the tax rate impact, okay?
Right.
Which is allowing you to grow and basically, you know, keep at below what you have, you told
them. And that there's a plan that we're doing
exactly.
That to mitigate that. I just wanted to put that in the notes because I think maybe we could put something in that within the, it just shows how the board was proactive and that how we have to put that out to the community and.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic. Let's just kind of work on how we...
Right, how we're going to put it.
Mm-hmm. And this last slide is our schedule of events. I know at the last board meeting we did provide you with a tentative schedule of you know, important dates you needed to consider. I did put a draft on this because at this point we weren't sure on the actual board meeting, which now we know April 23rd will be the board meeting. And then we also need to...
It appears that if you look at the calendar, we are looking to come forward to the entire board on April the 23rd to present to you the parameter resolution to move forward with the sale of the 2013 bonds. If the board does decide to move forward, then we are tentatively setting the rating meetings in Dallas on May the 10th. I know we still have to kind of work out some of those details. And so this time is still a little fluid, but May 10th is the date that we have on the calendar. If it all moves forward, then we can foresee pricing the bonds as early as May 31st and closing by the second or third week of June.
Good. And is that your recommendation? That is what is best for us to do in the current climate?
I think so. And let me just say that, you know, we've been talking a lot about the market, and I think that at this point, you know, given also taking into account some of the state aid, you know, the grants, IFA, ADA, and all those, we really do need to kind of start moving this forward, and that's one regard. The second regard, it's the market itself. We've been seeing, you know, it's been very steady for the past few months, but we have been seeing some minor uptick in the ratings, in the actual rates. And so I think it's best to try to get into the market, try to close it as quickly as possible to get the best interest rate. We're still at a historically low levels, but we have been moving up in the past 2-3 weeks. And so I think that, you know, with this schedule, if we just move forward, you know, you can get a pretty good rate.
And we're ready to use the amendment.
Yes, certainly. And if the board approves the JCI contract, I mean, that is a big portion of funds.
That'll help draw down.
That'll draw down the amount.
Okay.
And Jennifer's ready to present, I know, coming April 10th, the CMR, and so that's where we will start seeing a lot of the funding needed.
And this time frame will change. I mean, nothing's set, so you will be getting more copies of this as you tell us how you want to move.
Okay. So does anybody have any questions? I think overall we have a good working document. I think there's a lot of information there that
there's
some details we can work on and make it, you know, good. I want to thank you all for the hard work. Is there any other questions? No? Not, I'll take this to next.
Have you ever been embarrassed?
I'm sorry?
Have you
ever choked up or?
Oh, embarrassed?
No, not at all. No,
you're going to be the one that goes,
No, you won't.
I'll tell you one thing. I was at the University Medical Center. We had rating meetings all day. Let me tell you, I think that when you're so involved in your entity, such as the school or the hospital, whatever, you're very passionate about what you do. So when you get there and you have a chance to tell your story, you know, you just basically go with it and you shine. And I've never seen anybody feel embarrassed. But let me just say, not everybody has to speak. I think, you know, in our own, one thing I'll recommend is that, you know, because we do only have an hour and a half for the presentation, that only maybe two of the governing body members speak, just because of time. But I do feel that if there's anything that any one of the board members has to say about anything, you know, you have the opportunity. That's the opportunity that you have to speak to them. But, you know, you can just let a couple of us do the hard work.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Item C is the preliminary 2013-14 budget presentation.
Good evening. Once again, President, okay. I will be presenting this evening our preliminary budget projections. We have not gotten the preliminary evaluations. I did receive a call from Ms. Gilbert's office today, as a matter of fact. They will be coming by to visit me on April 4th, and on that date, they will be bringing the preliminary. So that will give us a better picture of what our revenue is estimated. So I start off with the very first slide discussing what our enrollment projections are. And again, I am still going with that 2% increase that has been pretty steady for the last couple of years, at least the last 3 years that I've been involved in the budget preparation. And so we're projecting a total of 6,162 students enrolled with their district by next year. In presenting the financials for February, I did present that our current enrollment right now is at 6,080. So, you know, it's right around there with the enrollment was taken based on our snapshot, our new snapshot. And so right now, like I said, we are at 6,162. So on our per capita allocations, we will be doing the general instructional allotment for $90 per student for the elementary at the elementary level, $100 at the middle school level, and $115 at the high school. Last fall, I did receive a request to provide you with overview of what our region, our districts within the region are doing as far as that allocation and whether it's an adequate amount. I don't know if you recall the report I had given you, but we are pretty much on target. Some have a slightly different methods of not instead of per capita, just a lump sum amounts in certain areas. But for the most part, the per capita, we are pretty much on target with what the region does, or the districts within the region do. We do make allocations for counseling, nursing, administration, also by per capita, and you can see the amounts there. They are the same at each level, whether elementary, middle, or high. And we've got our state comp ed funding. We have an allocation there of $75 per student. And then we've got a high school allotment that's allocated only to the high school and the middle school. and the dollar amount is there also per capita. The numbers that the actual allocation on the student per capita, in addition to this, we also include Title I funding that is given based on the at-risk percentage that the campus has. I'll let you know that we currently have four campuses over the 75% threshold, so they receive the larger sum, which is $61 per student. We also have the high school, who's 74.7, so technically they're at the 75%. All other campuses are below, and so they get a lower amount of $56. In addition to this, we do have custodial allocations, athletic allocations, library funds, UIL funding. So we do cover other areas. It's not just the loan, you know, the per capita we give. We do give other amounts. So the factors that are considered when we are projecting what our revenues will be is, first of all, the average daily attendance. And so a 2% increase from our current, or our snapshot of October 2012 attendance, which was at 5,688 students, brings us up to 5,802 students. That is what we're projecting for our ADA, and that is what really generates our money. Regardless of how many students are enrolled, our ADA is what actually produces the revenue. Our property tax rates, we're looking at maintenance and operation tax rate of $1.17 and our interest in sinking of $32. If you notice, this has actually increased from the last several years. We've been at 25 cents for the debt service tax rate. And so this is the first time we go up in several years. Our projected property values, and again, this was an estimated percentage increase from our last year's revenue property valuations, I take the projected property values of $1.7 billion. I divide it by our $100 home value, multiply it by our tax rate, and gives us $20.7 million for our revenue in our properties. On this slide, we have our projected revenue overall for the 2013-14 school year. As I was mentioning in the slide, the previous slide, we're projecting about $20 million in revenue from our property taxes. In addition to that, under local sources, we do have other facility rentals and other local revenue that comes into the district. That's putting us right now at an estimated $22.7 million in local sources. Our state sources, which is generated, of course, by our state legislature and our ADA numbers, the formulas that we enter into our spreadsheet formula that the state provides, right now is calculating that we are going to see a $24.9 million in revenue. If you'll notice, there is a slight decrease in state sources from last year to this year, and that's because our valuations are going up, so our state assistance is going down. Now, we're hopeful. We've seen the news. We've heard the legislature and what's coming out of there, and that they're going to be returning some of our funding back. How much? I'm not sure at this point. So this is a conservative amount that I'm going to use in our projections until we have more concrete information. And then, of course, we have our federal sources. Our federal sources are made up from our food service program. That is the largest portion of our federal sources. And we're projecting a slight decrease of $4.4 million.
Does that include the...
That includes E-rate in the federal sources in revenues. So we're looking at our total revenue projected at this point at $52.1 million for our 2013-14 school year. We have done our budget workshops with our campuses and in departments. We've allocated their allotments of different revenue. And so right now, preliminarily, we have 51.0 in expenditures, and like I mentioned earlier, 52.1 in revenues. So that puts us at 1.1 million estimated revenues over expenditures. That's There is some money there, but it's not a lot of money. Not as much as we'd like to see. I will add that our salary compensation package that was presented last year definitely was a significant amount, and so of course it ate up into the, it's something we have to sustain year after year. But there is some revenue there for considerations. We've got many budget priorities that have been presented to us. Mm-hmm. We have salary or positions that, you know, through needs assessments have been brought forward. And I know that Martha will be presenting all those positions to you all in the future for you all to determine what is, you know, your decision on what you want to approve. I do want to state, again, we may be seeing more funding because, one, we don't have our valuations, first of all. And secondly, if the state does return some of the funds they took from us, then we will see more revenue. So this is very preliminary, but just something to keep in mind that, you know, there's 1.1 million and the wants and the needs are.
And we're meeting together this week to look at that.
I know that there's things in the budget that we budgeted for this year that we have not. We have. I'm thinking of a bus. Mm-hmm. The bus is something I think of regularly.
But you're referring to like the fund balance, and the designations through fund balance.
Well, yes. That, you know, they're all still safe and secure. Yes. All that money.
All that money is still there. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Whatever was designated that isn't, you know, for whatever reason isn't purchased or used,
it stays
in fund balance. We don't actually take it out until we're ready.
Okay.
If you notice in the budget amendments we provided to you all, we have the one budget amendment requesting to take the fund balance for our software, for our asset, because now it's time to move forward. We're, you know, right in the middle of the asset convert. The asset inventory and then the conversion. And so now it's time to actually pull the funds out.
Sounds good. I'll forward that number.
Yes.
Does anybody have any questions? No? I'll take us to the next report. Thank you, Martha.
Mm-hmm. Item 6 is the consent agenda, and administration recommends approval as presented.
Okay. Is there any items that need to be pulled before?
S. Revision of status.
Okay, and
what? I'd like to pull item B.
B?
B as in Victor.
B as in Victor.
Okay, next.
I would like to pull item P.
I would like to pull item T
as in
Tom.
I'm sorry, Miss Mendoza's
P.
P as in Paul.
P as in
Pat. Thank you.
I'd like to pull item Y.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anybody else? No? If not, what I have pulled is item P, S, T, B, and Y.
Say it again.
P, S, T, and B, and Y.
What about B? Didn't we get a B?
No.
No, that was a B.
That was a B.
That was a B. That was my
attendance or. I want to be sent to Blue at 4.
No, I'm good. Miss Aguirre, you promised me.
Yeah, okay, you took my thing.
Yes. Thank you. I'll have C. But Miss Aguirre, you have assured me that the answers to the warrant list are tomorrow. Okay. Thank you.
And is there anybody? So I have IRC. S, T, B, Y, and I need a motion to approve the rest of the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda with the exception of B.
No, C.
C, P, S, T, V, Y.
Okay.
I'll second the motion.
I have a motion and a second. There's no discussion. Tony, can you pull the board?
Mr. Cordato?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Do you all want to take them in the same order, or do you want to?
Yeah.
Is there anybody other than council to vote? In other words? Huh? Yeah, let's get that one out of the way.
Mr. Chair, before we go on to the most agenda items, I just want to point out on the attendance at our high school, page 56.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what it was last year, but I kind of remember it probably, it looks like it's dropped about 2%. That's quite a substantial.
I will look at that, and I will give you something in tomorrow's morning.
That is substantial difference.
Sorry, the building principal.
Yes, and but what I will do is I will put in. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. It's only Tuesday, so I will put it in the Thursday bracket as far as Mr. Coronado is. I will take it maybe 6 months, a year ago.
Do you see the impact of the enrollment dimensions impacting the enrollment at the high school?
Say that again. Okay.
The impact of Natchez attendance and recruitment impacting.
Oh, absolutely, it does. Absolutely. I mean, if you add, you could add at least 90% of the kids that are at Natchez to the high school. I mean, that would. Because we only have, you know, I could absolutely pull a report as far, would you like that as far as, okay, thank you. I'll put that for Thursday information. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Today's Tuesday.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Okay, I'll take this to a vote.
Motion to
We vote on this one?
No. It was just.
No, it's just not, but we have a motion and a second for the consent agenda.
Except the other
item.
Except the other item.
It carried unanimously.
Oh, it did?
Yes.
Oh.
Sorry,
it's
only
more
just
now. It's okay. I would take us to, and is it okay if we go with B?
Yes.
Okay, item B is the phase two of Johnson Controls contract, scope of work and performance contract for district-wide projects.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I requested this item be pulled just to, you know, the specifics of the proposal is really is the $3.6 million. And as Mr. Lopez pointed out, the proposed savings there is, you know, page 182. And if we finance, you know, depending on the amount we finance, I think they've made a prediction where it's an amortization of 15 years, that the payments could range from $129,000 to $226,000 per year. And if we would go with the higher efficiency unit, it is going to provide that savings over the year of the debt. We'll basically end up with a wash in terms of investment in that. With obviously a better quality environment for our kids. Now, the issue for us here is how do we commit to the $3.6 million right now? My suggestion is that the board commit to the funds, and we need a proposal from administration on the financing of either the entire amount, and at the end of April when we get our report on recapture, that we reduce it by a certain amount from the recapture funds, or maybe even putting some other amount from fund balance. Now I know that there was a from the open forum that Spagnuolo requested that in terms of the window issue, you know, not to say that we're not going to take a look at those issues. Obviously, we want to make sure that you know, when we're talking about sealing the windows, it's going to include those windows that are obviously are not operable to be closed right now. those that are closed that don't need to be open, we have to seal. Actually, all of them eventually. But the issue is not whether we don't need the insulation and all those issues. I know we're going to need them at some of the campuses. It's just that putting that money forward into, you know, some of that 10 million to go into the insulation and the windows right now would probably be not the best use in terms of what we have to be able to provide the district-wide refrigeration. And the bond, while it may have mentioned the HVAC, it did not have a budget for the heating. It had only a budget for the cooling. There was never a discussion of a budget. Not only that, it lacked the budget for, as we noted from Johnson Controls, the electrical, the infrastructure, and the controls. So it's not that we don't need to do some of these other remediations like or improvements, including insulation. I think, though, they'd be better off that we can do those if we divert that money towards the entire district-wide energy issue of the refrigerated air, because it would be a lot easier and less expensive than if we delay the HVAC, refrigeration conversion. If we delay it, it's going to get more expensive. The issue with respect to the insulation might be a lot easier for us to add on later, not to say the entire campus with controls or refrigeration units. And I think those issues probably lend themselves a bit more, quite a bit more than to do the insulation. And I think it's probably will add in terms of the environment for our kids an immediate impact. Points are well taken from the community about those issues. It's not that we're going to completely ignore it, but there are needs there. It's just that right now we may not be able to.
The question to clarify a little further, it was that Johnson Controls indicated that they're not going to replace all the windows, they're going to replace select windows, insulate some, the envelopes on others. It's not that they see a benefit to replacing all of the windows, there's no cost return. And I think that's really what was communicated, at least that's what I got from the presentation from Johnson Controls, that it's not that they're saying they're not going to replace windows. Certain windows will be replaced. I'm sure some of the open ones. And if maybe Johnson Controls can talk a little further to that.
Thank you for the opportunity. Once again, on the window side, there was three schools that were identified in the bond for window replacement. What we did is we put another column, and it was in the presentation that we provided, of a total of 2, 4, 5 schools that were going to do the resealing and painting and for the efficiency or building envelope. And so that's how it was going to be addressed to mitigate, including those three schools, but in addition to that, doing some additional schools that we felt during our survey needed to be done. So not only the three schools that were in the bond, but 2 other schools that weren't in it are going to get some additional work done to those windows.
We know we're going to need additional insulation. We have our issues, and that's been brought to us. But I think in terms of the importance of which items need to be probably dealt with first, I think it's probably, doing the cooling issue and then coming back and taking a look at obviously improving the insulation at a future time with another bond or we still need to address those issues. But right now, in terms of better use, greater impact to their kids' environment, I think would be best suited if we actually go diverting those funds, our majority of those funds, from the window and the administration for those campuses to be put towards the pool. So I just... My suggestion is that the board approve this. We can talk about it. How are we going to pay for this $3.6 million? My suggestion is that we have administration take a look at the maintenance tax notes, because the reason I say that, and I don't know if there's still financing available to do the performance contract or not.
Portion of it is.
What portion of that, Mr. McCool?
It's a total of $2,310,795 can be financed.
Okay. Now, the issue with that is, if we finance that, and maybe that's a question for our financial advisor or Martha, if we do the financing on those and later on decide that we want to pay it off down the road, I know you've indicated there that there's a 1% penalty, right?
Yes.
For prepayment?
Yes.
Okay. Is it after a certain time period or is it at any time period?
I don't know if there's a run-out period that you no longer incur that. I'm just going by what I've been told.
And the other issue I have is, if we were going to pay that off and do and use a future bond funds to pay that off, is that going to require a separate referendum? I know in the maintenance tax notes it does. Is it going to require a separate referendum to pay off this financing? Or can we just included in the overall general bond program. For maintenance tax note, we actually have to have a specific referendum just to abate a maintenance tax note. I don't know what the issue with respect to this kind of financing. And maybe
I don't know. I've not discussed that with Mr. Bina. I did speak to Mr. Bina today.
Right.
And before she left from the meeting. And I know that with a high degree of confidence that the vast majority of the items in the scope of work would be permissible to cover with maintenance tax notes. But we do not yet have a final opinion from bond counsel that the entire amount that is short
would be
looking for financing, it would be
The entire 3.6?
Right.
Right. And maybe we can get an opinion on that. And the other issue is, what would the difference be in the interest rate going with the maintenance tax notes versus this financing? So that's the issues I see that we need to
hear. If I recall properly, maintenance tax notes can, there are distinct parameters, and you can only go, so it's not very much money.
No,
I mean, it's not like millions. It was.
No, the amount is not an issue for us. We reviewed that issue with Paul Braden, and again, I'm reporting from what Ms. Rubina told me that the dollar figure is not the issue. The issue is whether or not all of the items within the scope of work, the equipment, the maintenance, and the follow-up, we just call it service work. Everything is included within the parameters for maintenance tax. It's not the dollar amount.
And
if it all fits, it would all be covered.
When we've done it in the past, the maintenance tax note was actually, we used a good amount and what it was for, of course, the maintenance, and I believe like refrigeration, that type of stuff of the maintenance. And when talking to Maria Rubina, she says on the total amount of the bond, it might not fit the amount that we're looking at financing.
It's doable. It's just a matter of them fitting it within the.
So I think what we need to look at is doing that with the option just in case.
I've got a, and maybe this is just on a different, I've got from First Southwest a memorandum that says time warrants are only, the maximum is 500,000 only.
No.
And the maximum term is 5 years.
I'm not sure what that was for.
Okay.
This is different because this is for.
The chair?
That's the reason?
Yeah. This is chair of maintenance, tax maintenance. Go ahead.
Yeah, we did a maintenance tax on 7 years ago, right before building the high school for, we put about 1.1 or 1.2 million so that we could get the stadium built with the turf and the infrastructure to do the actual turf up there. And we did that and I know we were able to amortize it over a longer period of time than just. And back then, we were able to do 1.7 million before that. But we did have to, in order to pay for it with new bond funds, we had to have a specific referendum just to
the payoff, the maintenance tax was in a separate bond. So we had actually two bond issues that went out at that time to basically pick out the maintenance tax notes, and the other one was for the additional bond money to complete the high school. So I know it can be amortized over a longer period, and the amount, I think, shouldn't be a problem. We did 1.7 million back then, 7 years ago.
I do need to point out a couple of things with respect to the agreement. Mr. Lopez and Mr. Bailey are both here, and I want to thank them. I've been on the phone a couple different days now, and all day today, it seemed like, going over changes and revisions of the contract. We've agreed on 95% of all of the items. There is one item that they need to review internally, and it is regarding the installation of some sub-meters on new construction. I spoke to Ms. Matthews about it. From our end, we'd like not to have that in there, but it's not such a critical item that we ask that the contract be held up. And we reviewed it. Mike and I agreed on the changes that the district asked for, including regarding the schedule of payments, and requirements to follow district policies, the prevailing wage laws, and a variety of different items. And with those changes, we're not in a position to have made them today. So if you approve it, we ask that you approve the contract subject to us finalizing those changes. And I know Mr. Rodriguez is going to be traveling the next couple of days, so we will have the final agreement ready for his signature if you approve it when he returns. But you can vote and have that approval today, because they do need to move forward, it's my understanding, and issue instructions to go ahead and start moving forward with the equipment. They have an April 1st deadline to do that. If you don't have that scheduled by April 1st, and it's going to delay it. You're not going to be able to finish it this summer. So it's important to move forward.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, the other issue is, have our third-party reviewer, that's also...
I know Paco Smith and Cooper did the last one. I don't know where they are on this one.
I mean, this obviously will be subject to...
subject to third-party review.
Jennifer?
Right, that's right. One of the agenda items that was approved this evening was PSC's fee proposal, and so, of course, if you approved it tonight, you'd also be pending their review.
We can approve it subject to their
approval. Right. That hadn't typically been, that was not an issue. That was a non-issue in the last.
All right. Okay.
And do I see that there's a potential savings to the district, too? Positive cash flow.
Yes, depending on the method of financing. I don't, Jennifer?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Parson, do we know what the exact payment would be of financing 3.6 versus 2.5? Well, we can finance 2.3, is that correct, Mr. Lopez?
Yes, sir.
So let's take the 2.3 figure at the interest rate that it's tentatively scheduled for, Mr. Lopez.
2.5.
2.55.
Yes.
What would our payment be amortized over the 15-year life of this?
What we have in the cash flow right now is based on current interest rates that you just brought up, sir. $129,114.
That's the actual payment of 2.55 for the 2.3.
Right. And again, that piece of it is guaranteed pursuant to the legislation. So if there's a shortfall there, we make up that difference. And that's in the contract.
Okay. Martha, do we know anything about the interest rate on the maintenance tax notes?
No, Maria was waiting. She indicated that she'd be talking to Mr. Braden, and that she would we just follow up and get more information, but she saw no problem with the tax maintenance notes. And I asked her, you know, what she recommended. Do we do the full 3.6 or just the one? And so she said either one was doable with her. Tax
me. Okay, well, I'd like to see what the difference in the financing.
I did take all the questions you brought forward. I will forward to Maria tomorrow.
Can
can't we just approve it subject to us deciding on our own finance and then we'll do that? I went back and looked at the, they're asking for an opinion letter, which we revised and they've agreed to the changes. And finance is not an item in the opinion letter, so I think we're fine to move forward. If you want to go ahead and approve it, we can just choose as we speak to the grade and you can agree.
Okay.
I have a question. And I don't really know how to put it other than just lay it on the table. We have the ability right now to borrow $3.6 million at 2.5%, which is unbelievably low.
2.3 million.
No. I know what you're saying, but what I'm saying, we have the ability to do 3.6 million, am I correct?
On the maintenance tax loans, but not on the 2.55.
Okay.
Only 2.3.
Only the 2.3.
At 2.55.
Okay, that's it. That's the total that can go into
under
that. Okay.
Under
I understand. Okay, then my question
is. And it's based upon our risk guidelines.
Okay. So all we're eligible for is the 2.3. 10.795.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
My suggestion is that I think we need to go forward with this. At this time, Mr. Chair, I move that subject to the contract modifications, the third-party review, and all the other items that we spoke about with respect to the contract itself, that the board approved phase two of Johnson Controls contract, scope of work and performance contract for the district-wide projects as presented.
Second that.
Steve, will that work?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There's a motion and a second.
Do we need to put the amount? Council?
No, we have it.
It's 14.
Not 10, sorry. It is total project cost of $14,280,795.
Okay, and I will amend my motion to
include the amount.
But it's if we don't do it now, it will cost more and we're not going to do it district wide.
The economy is starting to pick up. The inflation is looking to all of us.
Well, the interest rate will be 3% next year.
Yeah, the time is right.
Yeah, so you're right.
We seek the opportunity.
So I have a motion and a second. Is there any questions or discussion? Hearing none, Tony.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
You're still cool kids.
Air conditioning for all our kids, all of them.
Thank you.
I mean, the chocolate is
fresh. Better ventilation. Don't take us to the next time.
Do you care which order we go in?
Go back to the order.
I guess it's C. Okay.
Okay, who is that?
Oh, item C is the budget amendments.
Budget amendments, yes, I do. I'm looking at budget amendment BJE 177269, and I would like to see that not happen.
177269.
She and I.
Do you see
them?
Thank you. Do you see it?
Yes, I do. 177269.
Precisely. Okay. That's function 13 to function 21.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that okay? Do you want to
move? I move to to not.
To approve the item.
Thank you. To approve the budget amendments with the exception of budget amendment number BJE177269.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. No discussion. Tony, for more.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Stearns?
Yes.
Okay, that will take us to the next item. That Lord P?
No, P.
P. Mine is not a question of the memorandum of understanding, because we've had it for 100 years. My rationale for pulling this item is to remind administration about those portable buildings.
Yes. There's a couple of things. As a matter of fact, I talked to Ms. Valdez, who was meeting with Head Start, and it was tomorrow, and I told her that, well, I really can't say what I told her. I told her about something about those portables and being kindling, but something like that. So I will get back to you. As a matter of fact, I'll see if I have an answer, or at least an update for Thursday.
You need them gone by June 1st, is that
June right? 1st is initially what we have right now.
But just so that you know, we've sent them an official letter in January, and we followed up, and we sent them another letter copying Ms. Brigham, the whole nine yards. So, I mean, they've been fully up with ample
time. I think our legal,
Steve,
yes, sir. Council needs to send them a letter.
We're putting it up for sale.
Yeah, Steve, I think what they wanted was a letter actually from me, because I've already sent several. Maybe they need one with more of.
Just need to copy the last one you sent.
And maybe what we had talked about the Facilities and Finance Committee meeting was maybe saying that they would pay for the cost to relocate them to another CISD property just to get them out of our way until they're
gone.
Okay, so
they belong to us or they go away.
Oh, okay, so they either pick them up or they pay for the cost for us to demolish.
Exactly.
Okay. With the exception of that rule.
Yes. Yeah.
Either they give an in-kind donation or they take them out of our
way. Okay, all right.
I'll send you those. The board asked for numbers. I apologize. I will put in writing on Thursday, but here are the numbers for what you had asked on. I think it was last week. It could have been last night. I don't remember. But anyways, we have 3-year-olds, we have 182 kids. No kind of deal. 4-year-olds, we have 158. And 0 to 2, we have 63. Then our 0 to 2 babies, those have to meet certain qualifications, as you know. But I just wanted to give you those numbers. And it was not so easy to get those numbers.
Actually, my question, maybe I didn't express my question correctly. I wanted to know how many of our kids, kindergarten kids, or pre-K kids had participated.
We actually have that one too, but I have that on a spreadsheet. I think right now I have, and I looked in my office just right now, and I have a spreadsheet that has 100 names on it, like 98 names on it.
Can you provide that to us?
I'd have to take all the kids' names on it. I'll put how many kids had attended that were graduates of the Head Start. Is that what you want? Okay.
And I thank you, Ms. Brigham. And with that, I'll move to approve the memorandum of understanding with the
kids. I have a motion. Do I have a
second?
No discussion. That takes us.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Stearns?
Yes.
Okay, let me hear that.
No, I'm
hold on.
Okay,
which one? Mission assignments. What do you have to ask for?
Page 165. Okay, Matthew.
Hold on, I'm sorry.
Looks.
Hold on. It runs all the way down to 172 and so on. And according to the committee, we only recommended to the full board the stipends, not to include the CTE.
Yes, ma'am.
And they're here. I don't understand why they're here.
Ms. Arajo had added, was able to make some changes to her stipends and had added those for your consideration at this time. However, I know that the memo that she submitted to you had an increase in the stipends. And what I would like to propose is that the stipends remain as they are and that we just add the two new clubs, organizations that she had, the DECA and the National Technical Honor Society, in the amounts of $1,450. The increases she's proposing, I spoke to her and I'm thinking that maybe during the budget process, then we bring those forth. Because the amounts that were in this original stipend list were the amounts that were approved in our previous budget process, and those were the amounts that were approved. And so I think that any increases coming forth for any of the stipends now would have to be included in the budget process that we're starting up here in the next month, or you know, when I meet with Martha Aguirre, we get all our ducks in a row.
So does that include the people that are certified to teach the language class?
We can go ahead. Is that
for next year?
Yes.
Yes, next year. Yes, sir. You had asked for that.
Okay.
And what we're going to do is we're going to look at that so that we can encourage that master's degree, the 18 hours, I believe.
What we're looking at right now and what's currently in the stipend listing is the amounts that we're approving the budget that will be paid out in May.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to do then with her increases is just increase or just add the two organizations, the Student Marketing Organization and the Technical Honor Society in the amounts of $1,450.
Right.
Okay.
And so add those, leave everybody else as they are,
yes.
And come budget year, yes. We move on.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And again, TASB will evaluate all of our stipends.
Yes.
You know, the maintenance that we sign with them, they will, you know, just kind of look over the market values.
So the only difference is we're adding these new people.
Right. Yes, the two yeah. student organizations.
For this year, everything else remains
the same.
Exactly like it.
Yes.
Okay. Motion to approve the the revision of stipends is presented by administration.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. Kelly, can you pull the board?
Mr. Cornaro?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next item.
Item T.
That's board.
Yes. The committee recommended that this item, the electrical easement request, have a follow-up on it and a tie-in, and we haven't heard that happen, so I'd like to see this.
Yes, I apologize. I have not called the electrical company for that, so yeah, I have no problem with postponing that.
I would like to postpone this until next month's meeting.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay.
I need a table. Do we table it?
I move to postpone T.
Either way, postpone.
Okay. Is that, excuse me,
postpone until next month's meeting.
April's okay. meeting?
Sure.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. No discussion. Please.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Searles?
Yes.
Next item.
That would be item Y.
I pulled this because of the amount for the MNK Architects fee proposal for a new classroom addition with what we're looking at in the package.
pull up, I think it's page 214. Big paper. 3,400 square feet, the design fee for that is $62,000. What's the reason behind that amount, I guess? And I just did some basic math here, and even at 5%, you're talking about a $1.2 million addition. To 10%, $620,000 just for three rooms and a hallway. It just seems excessive to design four or five walls. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering why the amount of $62,000, more so than the pre-K-8 soils testing.
They give a breakdown of their fee on the 11 by 17 sheet. You can see their consultants, Allegro, their mechanical consultant, that's 65,000.
214, where it starts.
Thank you.
Before that, it's 118.
Looking at this sheet here.
Mr. Medina, I have a lot of questions on that one, too. Do you think we should refer that back to the facilities committee and have the main people come in and...
Yeah,
we'll do that. Because I've got some questions on it. I figured it was going to cost at this price, we're going to be paying like $182 a square foot for our building. And that's not equitable. And the corridor is really large, and I wanted to ask about that too.
Sure, we're going to have them. We can take the away.
Right. I move to postpone and actually push this back to committee.
Committee.
Okay, push this back to committee.
Have a motion and a second. I mean, if I have a second.
Sure, I'll second it.
Motion and a second. No discussion? No. Tommy, can you pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Okay. Now we'll take this to
extend
executive.
The time is now 9:44 p.m., and the meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code, Sections 551071, 072, and 074, for discussion of certain personnel matters and for discussion with legal counsel regarding possible acquisition of real estate and status of appraisal review board challenge.